Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. And the man behind the switchboard is Mr. David Chen. Well, it's a sad day in boxing. And it's even sadder, you know, that a great trainer and overall a fantastic analysis for HBO, but is going to be mostly remembered as a trainer who's had numerous champions underneath his belt, Emmanuel Stewart, who has passed on earlier today, I believe in the morning time, at the age of 68. He has had a long, lustrous career, a very respected career. And this is a major blow to the boxing community. It's a major blow to the families and friends that knew Emmanuel. We've had Emmanuel Stewart on the show. Gabriel has met Emmanuel, and you know, and he's one of those guys you could sit back and soak up all the knowledge that you could. You know, it's that old saying, this guy had more knowledge in one pinky than we have in our whole career of boxing, and that was Emmanuel Stewart, you know. It's been a tough week. I want to say rest in peace to Darren Mitchell, who was my cousin, who just passed away at a very young age too. Died at 42, had a heart attack, and so it's been pretty rough. It's been pretty rough, man. Going back with Emmanuel, you know, I mean, this is a guy that's the Motor City Detroit, made himself out of going back, and we were saying the dark sport. This guy made something of himself, you know, and always said that he wasn't a rich man. He was a man that gave back everything he could, nickel and dime, back into the sport. He invested in the sport. Not just invested in sport, he invested in his fighters. You know, he's from Tommy the Hitman Hearns to Lennox Lewis. He's worked with some of the best, from Julio Cesar Chavez at Gran Campañón to the Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya. He's helped out Jermaine Taylor. He's helped out numerous fighters around this world. And he tried to, you know, embed his knowledge and everybody he's reached out and tried to speak to, and whoever would sit down and listen. He's going to be greatly missed. And like in my tweet, I said, if you're a fight fan like myself, he's going to be missed. He's definitely a part of the boxing community that we are not going to be able to replace ever.
Now, Emmanuel, you know, it's a tough day, man. This would be a tough show for me. He was my first contact in sport, you know, the first big name I interviewed. And that interview really opened up a lot of doors for me. I was still writing for Doghouse Boxing up in – I was living in Sacramento. I hadn't made the move here, and he kind of legitimized me by talking to me. And
right.
I did a piece about his gym. I tweeted it out today, how the Kronk was kind of failing. And it was coming apart. And so we did a story about a benefit for it, and I just got to know him, and then he was that guy. I mean, you see him in Vegas or any fight, and you couldn't walk with him because you'd walk 5 feet and people would stop him, and he would stop for everybody, and he would, you know, people would take photos and autographs, and he wouldn't say no to anyone. And you walk another 5 feet and another crowd would stop us. You know, I just have so many great memories of just listening to him talk, tell stories, so many things I didn't get to do. I never took the time. We didn't ever have a chance for him to teach me his right hand, which I always wanted to learn from him, how to throw that right hand, how he taught it, which is, I think, one of his great legacies. His fighters could throw a right hand, you know. With, I think people – it was 43 champions he worked with.
Wow, yeah.
He went from being – he was actually a featherweight champion in the Golden Gloves, I think 63.
Right.
And then he happened to his brother wanted to box, and so he took him, his brother James, he took him to the Kronk and started teaching him. And his brother, I think, later on went on to win amateur honors. I think it was a national champion or a Golden Gloves champion. And from then on, man, he was, you know, Emmanuel, as he liked to be called. You know, a lot of people were in the habit of calling him Manny, but he actually didn't like that name. And this it was kind of funny. He preferred Emmanuel, and he when he signed autographs, he because people would always misspell his last name. They spell it with a T, and it's Steward, you know, as in taking care of, you know, a guy that you know, a steward. And he would sign his autographs, and he would like capitalize the D, or he'd emphasize the D. Just so people wouldn't say, like, I got Emmanuel Stewart's autograph. And he was just an unbelievable guy who always had time. You know, it's a shame. You know, the last time I talked to him was just a few days before his surgery, and I didn't even know he was having. He was keeping it quiet, his illness. And he said he'd call me back in 10 minutes, and we never got a chance to talk. So it's just a rough day. He'll be missed, but he won't be forgotten.
No, definitely he wouldn't be forgotten. You know, there's plenty of, I think, memories that he has left behind for the boxing world and just the general public. I think his work, his craftsmanship, as it's going to be long lasting. It's not going to be forgotten at all. And I think that everybody he has reached out and touched and has helped out, they're going to carry on that legacy that Emmanuel Stewart has solidified in the boxing community. So
yeah, I mean, it's just the fights aren't going to be the same. You know, I was
right,
Tweeting out a bunch of different memories of him, you know, him at the ringside. I don't even know if there was a, you know, I can't recall, because I know Jim Lampley actually did the interview afterwards with Tony. I think it was just Emmanuel and Jim Lampley, as I recall, Vasily Giroff versus James Toney. And the fight, you know, if you haven't seen it, it's just all action in it. And Tony finally drops Giroff in the last round, which I think sealed the deal for him. And you could see it happening with like a minute or two to go. And Emmanuel's, he can see it happening. Like, he sees Giroff get hurt. And it turns into, instead of watching like HBO, it turns into like two guys watching the fights. And we all happen to be listening to them watch this fight, because Jim and Emmanuel just go crazy. And you know, it's one of the first and most memorable "Oh my God" that Emmanuel ever uttered.
Right.
When Joe finally gets dropped, and it's just awesome. They both go totally crazy, and Emmanuel could be different and a lot more honest sometimes off the air, off record, or
right
at the bar than he would be maybe talking about somebody on the air. But those moments weren't, you know, censored by HBO. They weren't him holding back. That was when him going crazy, like, you know, him with Berto and Ortiz, the most memorable. Oh my God! You know, when Berto gets dropped, those things, you know, those are the memories, man. That's what we talked about with Hall of Fame, and certainly Emmanuel working with 43 champions and the reclamation jobs he did. That he had like Cintron believing in himself and on a winning path. That he took, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, his own brother, Vitaly, had told Vladimir, "I think you're done at this point," after Brewster stopped him. And, you know, Vladimir fired everybody except for Emmanuel Stewart. And look where he is now. You know, he's the number one dude in the world, and he avenged his losses and is the champion that he is today. Lennox Lewis, same thing. Had been stopped, then when he got stopped later, and Emmanuel was able to bring him back. Holyfield with the rematch with Bo. I mean, and the list goes on and on. He was great at taking you to a different place to help you win.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just unbelievable. You know, if you go on my timeline today, I posted a bunch of videos, and a lot of them are just him yelling at Jermaine Taylor in the corner is one. But you could see what a great ring jockey he was, man. Not just a corner man, but like riding his guys at the finish line, you know.
You know, and that too, I think a lot of folks will remember of how passionate he would be. I remember when he became animated was with Lennox Lewis by allowing Mike Tyson to survive so many rounds. You know, I remember him yelling at him saying, "Stop effing with this guy and take him out." You know?
Yeah.
But you know what? Let's pass in some fight fans that want to remember Emmanuel Stewart here on Leaving the Ring. If you guys want to call in, 347-215-7598. We got a lot to discuss here on Leaving the Ring Radio. But let's patch in some fight fans right now, and let's catch up with them. Michael wants to talk Emmanuel Stewart. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
No, doing fantastic, brother. How you doing?
Tonight. Yeah, I just wanted to send my respects, you know, to Emmanuel Stewart. I actually met him 2 years ago at the Boxing Hall of Fame in up in Canastota, like over a year. And I was Gabe, I actually saw your tweet earlier about how the D, how you said the D is how he makes sure he shows the D, you know. And I looked at my autograph, and it's true. The D is really, like, you could tell he wanted to be the D, you know.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's funny. Is it capitalized or is it just a little bit bigger than everything else?
A little bit bigger than everything else, yeah.
That's too funny.
Then I met him in, I think it was 2010. This is before the Klitschko fought Hay, and they were just talking back and forth, you know, when the beef was just about to start, you know. And I read somewhere, some rumor, that HBO still wouldn't televise that fight, and it was kind of weird to me, you know. I was like, well, that's the biggest fight in heavyweight for a couple, in heavyweight division for a couple of years. It's weird that HBO wouldn't televise it. So as I'm speaking to him, whatever, I go, Manny, why won't HBO televise that fight, you know? He goes, I don't know, man. You got to ask Ross Greenberg that. You know, maybe he's too busy putting on some Andre Berto fight or something. And I thought that was so funny and so honest, because, you know, because at that time Andre Berto was on, like, every 3 months fighting nobodies, and I was like, well, why isn't one of the biggest fights in boxing now being televised on HBO? And
these motherfuckers, you know? I truly believe, yeah, he just probably get upset. I'm sure he threw a couple of MF bombs in there.
Yeah, he was the nicest guy, though. But yeah, it's just a shame. You know, I'm 23 years old. I'm one of my only friends who, you know, follows the sport of boxing. Everybody else is in the MMA and stuff. But it's kind of weird seeing a guy that my whole life, you know, basically I've seen him call fights, you know, and now he's gone. You know, it's weird, you know. But, you know, he was a great guy when I met him, guy, you know. Just sad to hear he passed, you know.
His aesthetic, that, you know, he'd rather see a brawl like we thought Hay Klitschko would be, but he always loved the knockout. You know, his fighters, he chose guys that went for the knockout, that didn't just possess the ability to have the knockout, which is kind of funny that he had these two kind of reluctant power-punching heavyweights to end his career, you know, in Klitschko and Lewis. But they still got the knockout for the most part. But you think about it, if you'd have put boxing in the hands of people like him, who's so instrumental, you know, to amateur boxing as well as pro boxing, we'd probably get a different product. We wouldn't have – I mean, Berto was actually an action fighter as much as he's on all the time. You know, he's rarely in bad fights, but I see Emmanuel's point. It's like, you know, I have no idea why they wouldn't want a heavyweight champion. They'd rather have this guy fight bums, basically, you know, or tomato cans, as they would be called. He was about action.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he was just a real nice guy when I met him, you know, and it was refreshing to see him be honest, you know, because a lot of people wouldn't say that, you know, especially a guy in his chapter, you know, and he was just a regular fan when I was speaking to him, you know. He didn't come across as some, like, some big star, you know, where he could have, you know, he deserves it. He's a Hall of Fame trainer, one of the best ever, you know, but he gives me an equal job, because I'm just a fan, guys, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'm not a little fucking special guy, you know, I'm just... And he treated me really cool, so that's just...
He understands that. You know, and Sugar Ray Leonard, I think it was Steve was telling me this, that they both had said this, that they considered it kind of part of their job to stop, and I don't mean that, you know, in a disingenuous way, but they spread boxing love wherever they go. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard always embraces the fans and does events, but it's always boxing related, and he loves this sport from top to bottom, you know, from the root to the fruit, amateurs to pro. And Emmanuel was very much like that. And if he could spend time with you, a 23-year-old guy or an 18-year-old guy or even a 64-year-old guy, and that guy goes and spreads the word, I mean, his work is done. He's spread the boxing love. I always just admired that about him, that he was just – I actually enjoyed watching him interact with the fans. I mean, one of my last, I want to say it was three fights back. I'm not sure which fight it was. Several fights back. I saw him walking We were at MGM Grand, and there's like a long way when you leave the arena to get to the first bar, which is Rouge, that when you leave. And that's usually where a lot of boxing people go. And Emmanuel was coming that way, and I saw him, and I went to say, what's up? And it was one of those things where he just got surrounded by people, and he and I never really got to talk until the end, and I kind of just walked with him and said, man, I don't want to keep you, because he was just heading to his room. And he would always have some event going on Sunday, so he wouldn't even stay in Vegas a lot of times. He'd get his stuff, head out for the last flight or the first flight early at 4 a.m. the next morning and be back to an amateur tournament on a Sunday, you know. He was tireless, but he never passed by a fan that wanted to talk to him. I love that about him.
Yeah. It's just a shame, man. You know, it's just a shame. You know, and it's what's so crazy. It happened so quick. I don't know. Maybe you guys know more on the inside, but it just seems like, yeah, we heard rumors he was sick, but then like it feels like 2 weeks later, like he's gone now. It's like, wow. You know? I don't know.
It's just so fast. I mean, it was stage 4 colon cancer, from what I understand. So
right.
when you find out, when you're diagnosed and it's stage 4, you know, I mean, the chances are next to none. And I think it happens that fast. You know, you go right into surgery. Either you make it or you don't, you know, and that's, I just had a friend that just beat stage 3 lymphoma, and it was, you know, touch and go, and he was a young man, you know, to get it at 68, it's just, you know, we see the result, you
right.
know, it's just a shame, it's an absolute shame, and it makes you, you know, just reminds you that you should take advantage of the things. I should have never waited to have Manny teach me that right hand, you know, I should have just taken advantage whatever I saw him. You know, makes you more alive. Death does, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And you know what? It's just crazy, man. It's just crazy.
Yeah,
it is. Thanks, Mike, for calling in, brother. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
No problem.
Really
guys.
Appreciate
How's
sharing
you,
that.
You
no too.
No problem. Have a good one, guys.
We got a lot of stuff here to cover in boxing. You know, like I said, it's tough. You know, when we lose one of our own, who we looked up to and respect, and you have a chance to, like I said, you know, we've had a chance to, you know, Gabriel's met him personally, had a chance to speak to him, and we had a chance to talk to him here on Leaving the Ring Radio, and he's definitely, like I said, he's made an impact and stuff, you know. We're going to move into some better news really quick. You know, yesterday it seemed like, you know, there was the start of a bad week for boxing when the AIBA had announced they were suspending the amateur program for USA Boxing for 3 months. And that obviously had started a wave of disappointed people. I mean, from coaches to fighters to really honestly to the community of boxing. And luckily, they retracted just a little earlier by saying that they have lifted it. They found out that their insurance was going to be covering the sport. And at the same time, the president of the USA Boxing has resigned. And that was pretty much what they were crunching at or squeezing at for them, for the USA Boxing to do, because of past statements that Hal had done in a New York article. I'm sorry, I'm having a lot of texts here at the same time. People are texting me like crazy. And it definitely had made an impact and left some displeasure or distaste in some folks by reading that article of his perception of why most kids get into the sport or what single criteria that he was looking for or what most people look for with inner-city kids or kids that are coming from a rough background. Or a broken home or a hardship. And some folks thought that was wrong in how he worded it or how he viewed it. But at the same time, I felt when I read that article was that he wasn't saying anything that was not – that didn't have any truth to it.
Yeah, I you know, I must be – there must be other things but you know, I mean, I can't sit here and say I'm an expert on USA Boxing. I'm not. You know, I'm certainly not on amateur boxing. I'm barely, you know, starting to try to I'm just doing my follow-up on that World Series of Boxing story, or I'm kind of running into roadblocks because I can't get Aiba to talk to me about it. What bothered me about the story, and I want to address your points because I kind of agree with you. You know, we'll just start there. The comments that he made in the New Yorker, it's an article back in, I think, May, about Clarissa Shields. And it's a very long and in-depth piece about women's boxing and its origins, where it's going. And part of it, Hal Adonis, who used to be the president of USA Boxing, talked about how half the women have been abused or are gay, basically.
Right.
He was talking about the women in the USA Boxing or in amateur boxing. And it was a harsh statement, and it was probably, you know, it's an oversimplification. But, I mean, at least going back to the old school days, I mean, I interview boxers for a living, and I don't have a lot of them sitting there going, I was abused, and go too deep into the childhood, but you can always read between the lines as far as I had a harsh life, I was poor, you know, one of seven kids. I mean, these aren't, you know, you and I both interview fighters every week. These aren't unusual stories. I'm not shocked by this. We go to the gyms. I don't understand why people would be shocked by that. By, you know, maybe it's because he's the president and he shouldn't be saying such things. But at the same time, we've got a fighter come out of the closet this last week, and everybody
right.
was very supportive. So, you know, are you mad that he's saying there's gay people in boxing? I don't really understand that. But anyways, he was ousted for his comments. And like I said, he's like in his 70s, so there's probably other things. And USA Boxing isn't exactly flourishing under his, you know, leadership. So I can understand. But what Aiba did, I thought, was kind of a terrorist move. Either remove this guy, because I guess there's a law that, you know, he basically went from president to the board of directors. And he was still there, and Aiba wanted him removed completely. There was people that were still loyal to him. They wanted him in, and so they pulled this power play. We will suspend all of USA Boxing if you don't get rid of this guy. Well, what happens when they don't like somebody else? And where are the checks and balances with Aiba? I mean, the bad judging in the Olympics, they're starting their own promotional firm for pros, and how they wrecked – apparently, according to all the fighters I've talked to, how they promised these fighters in the World Series of Boxing that they wouldn't have pro records when all was said and done, and that wasn't the truth. Where's the checks and balances for them?
Right.
That's my problem. I can't wait to talk to Arthur Horan tonight from USA Boxing, because he's going to have, I'm sure, some things to say and talk about the direction of USA Boxing, but I'm very curious to see his opinions on this.
Absolutely. In a little bit, he should be calling in right now. We have Pablo Cesar Cano call in and talk about his fight with Paulie Malnaggi this past weekend. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Got to get past Mr. David Chen behind the switchboard. Let's pass in some fight fans really quick, you know, before we continue on. And then we'll start rolling into talking the past weekend fights. And for this upcoming weekend fights, we got some predictions in our analysis, our breakdown of what we think is going to happen. But let's get on D, who wants to talk Manny Stewart, Emmanuel Stewart, here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live.
What's happening?
Good, brother.
Oh,
D,
man,
how are you, sir?
Very sad day, man. That's yes, definitely not the way you want to wake up in the morning. Look at your Facebook and see something like that right there.
Yeah.
I don't even much know the man, but I did shed a tear today, you know?
Without question.
I think a lot of people did, you know. This is a big blow and a very big heartbreak for the boxing community, you know. I mean, I think he did so much. And everything, you know, I mean, it wasn't a 50% thing. This was 100 to 120%. He put himself out there to help out the sport, to try to better the sport as best as he was able to and could, you know. So,
what was
yeah.
he like, Dave? Well, you knew him pretty well, whatever, you know. What was he like?
He was a nice guy. He was a nice man, you know. I never saw him, even when we were discussing like boxing's ills. He was never a, you know, there are some people that you see both sides and they can be angry about people in the sport. Or I never, you know, I heard him talk frankly about certain things, the way certain events were, you know, how they really went down or things like that, you know, who was a bad guy or this and that, you know, gossip. But about the past, He was not a vindictive guy. He was just a thoroughly nice person. You know, that's how I always remember him, and will always remember him. He was hilarious, and you knew you better have some room on your recorder when you called him. You know, you needed about an hour or two, because you one phone call about a specific story could turn into, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hour conversation about boxing life in general, everything. You know, he valued his role as a teacher, which I loved, you know, and so because I'm like a sponge, you know, I'm a good student, and he really explained how things work, you know, in sport, you know, and I loved that,
and he had a great way of actually, you know, painting a picture for you and to let you kind of visually see what he was seeing, you know, which is a difficult thing to do when it's live and it's, you know, it's on the fly of things. He knew how to analyze it and give you the delivery with great, you know, where he clarified it so smoothly at the same time that you either at the either you're going to be arrogant and not see what he was looking at, or you're going to go, man, I didn't even notice that. That's a great breakdown and stuff. And I thought he did add a lot when he got on HBO, you know, helping out with the, you know, commentating. And did he call him always right? No, you know. When he called him, he did it, you know. And you know, a lot of times, too, I mean, he would, you know, what used to make me laugh is that he would break it down and say, well, this is what the guy would have to do to win, but I don't think it's going to happen. And bang, it happened. You know what I mean? So
This fight is going exactly as I thought it would, you know. He's got a lot of mannerisms, you know, and it's just, you know, we all lost somebody today, you know, to varying degrees, people that knew him, people that didn't. In a way, we all knew him because, like, you know, you asked me, what is he like off camera? A lot like the guy you see on camera, you know, the language is a little bluer, but it was a frank guy who just loved fighting. And he was a lot like Bert Sugar in that. There were times when, you know, Emmanuel would come out to the bar and you would see him. If it was a good fight, you know, and it was one of those ones where everybody wanted to stay up all night talking about it, he'd come out. And that's a different era, you know, than now. Things are a lot more political, and who you decide to drink with and talk with. You know, people are just very political these days. It's very phony out there. Emmanuel was of that generation that was not like that, in my opinion. They were real.
Definitely. All right, fellas. I appreciate talking to you.
Hey, thanks for calling in, brother.
As always, great call. Thank you, man.
Definitely.
We're waiting on Fellows, aren't we?
We are waiting on...
Who's the first guy?
Pablo Cesar. We're waiting on him.
Oh,
And then a little later, we're going to have Belos Garcia call in and talk to us about his fight that happened 2 weeks ago on the undercard of Rios and Alvarado, which was a great fight that he had with Ramon. And we have a pretty good lineup for tonight.
Yeah. Horan's going to be calling in probably right about here at 5:30. Gano's kind of missed his window a little bit. So.
He's, definitely missing his window, and I'm asking his publicist where it's going on, where is he at, so that we can get him on. If not, we're going to have to probably squeeze him in at a different time slot here on Leave the Ring. The thing is that some people don't understand that we are on a tight schedule, you know.
Yep. We run a tight ship here.
Yeah.
There's no waiting.
Yeah.
You miss it. You miss it. You know, that's what it comes down to. Jeez, maybe they're mad because I kept forgetting to tweet him. I kept forgetting that we had Cano, the real winner of Malignaggi versus Cano.
Well, let's talk about those fights here on Leaving the Ring this past weekend. You had a chance to watch Cano and Paulo Malignaggi, and we had a chance to see, I'm getting a lot of texts about people wanting to get on and, you know, that know us personally here on Leaving the Ring. So we're going to patch in as much as we can. We have a lot of people here holding on online at the same time looking at Danny Garcia versus Eric Morales. And, Alexander definitely given I wouldn't say it was a boxing lesson. I just think that it was a lesson that we already knew that was going to be given to Randall Bailey. the KO King, who really just KO'd himself, and you know, that night, and he almost did it with the Mike Jones. And I go back what I mentioned last week about, you know, there's, we hate to say it's a, you know, there's a lucky punch, but I kind of felt that that was the lucky punch with Mike Jones. He, you know, he's been able to overturn with that big punch. But how many of you guys, let me ask you this, Gable, first off, how surprised were you to see that Devon Alexander the Great took that, those great shots with right hands from Bailey and was able to just absorb them and continue on? I mean, he never buckled. He never took a step back and never phased them. He just would take a shot, and rather than, you know, trying to collect himself, if it did stun him, he returned a combination to Bailey to basically let him know, no, you're not going to get passed through me. I'm not Mike Jones.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart fighter, Devin. He's not exciting, but he's smart. But that fight, man, I mean, that was brutal. It was really boring. I was not excited by that fight at all. You know, it just, I think, you know, at this point, yeah, Bailey wanted to land that one right, and he was waiting all night to do it. And once you figure that out, that's what he was doing with Mike Jones, who's a younger, less experienced fighter. You know, it could work with a guy like him, who's kind of coming unhinged. It's his first big time on the first real big moment on the big stage, fighting for a belt. Of course, Bailey could take advantage of him, but Alexander has been through it, you know, and he's not going to let that happen. Real boring fight, but maybe that's what it needed to be, you know, in order to get away from that Bailey right hand. But jeez,
I know what, a lot,
man,
of names being thrown out there for Alexander as well. I mean, you know, he's in a very deep division at 140, so there's plenty of names, and I mean, and 147. There's plenty of names around those two divisions that he can definitely take a shot at, you know. And I you know, one of them is that have fought this past weekend as well on Saturday night, which was Kell Brook, who looked fantastic. And you know, and I've always said this: if you know how to use the jab, you could see not just the openings you can create, but you can actually drop a guy, stop a guy, or discourage them all in one shot. And we saw that with Kell Brook. But before I get any further about that, we'll get right back into that fight. We're going to continue following our guest schedule here on Leaving the Ring. We got Arthur Horan with us from the USA Boxing. Hey, what's up, brother? You're on live with us on Leaving the Ring. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's great. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. Appreciate it for you taking the time. I'm Dave Duenas, and I know you know already Mr. Gable Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring.
How you doing, Art?
Hi, Gabriel. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for coming on today. It's kind of a rough day for everybody in boxing. You know, yesterday was kind of a roller coaster for USA Boxing. You know, today, obviously, amateur boxing and all of boxing lost a great ambassador in Emmanuel Stewart.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with USA Boxing. I know they issued a statement today and the ban has been lifted. Can you shed a little light on that?
Yeah, well, initially, all of this came about as a result of what IEBA perceived to be very derogatory remarks made by the then president, Hal Adonis. Hal made some remarks at a fundraiser we had here in Beverly Hills, and also in the New Yorker magazine that did not reflect very well on our women boxers. And there was widespread anger, not only on behalf of the women, but other people in the organization. And as a result, Hal was removed as the acting chairman, president and chairman of USA Boxing. But under the USA Boxing bylaws, Hal was able to remain on the board of directors. Since he was elected by the LBC presidents, of which there are 56 of them, he had to be removed by them. So they had a special election, and Hal survived that recall. So although he was removed as chairman, acting chairman, and president, he remained on the board of directors, and that created havoc. There became two camps within the board of directors. It became very difficult to govern, and IEBA got very upset, and so did the USOC. And they said this does not reflect well on the membership if they would continue to keep Hal Adonis on the board of directors. So as a result of back and forth, they issued the suspension yesterday. And that suspension was met with you and a cry, and many people were very upset about that. Other people weren't. But I think the actions today really short-circuited what could have been some litigation on this matter. There were many events that were scheduled, including some charity events people had spent considerable amount of money putting together that were in jeopardy of falling by the wayside as a result of the suspension. So Aiba came back today and lifted the suspension, but continued the suspension of Hal Adonis. When they gave us a suspension yesterday, Hal was suspended for 2 years and fined, I think, $2,000. So as a result, today, Hal's suspension stays, but they lifted the suspension on the organization. I have to say that I think all of this will lead to something good at the end of the day. Unfortunately, amateur boxing finds itself in a place where some other sports found themselves many years ago. For example, skiing, which is one of the jewels in the Olympic crown, as boxing used to be, skiing was destitute many years ago. They had no money. They were bankrupt. And they changed the way that the organization was governed. And they went out throughout the country, and they brought in top CEOs of companies who liked to ski, and they made it more of a business than it was a sport. And as a result, today, I think skiing has in excess of $25 million in the bank. They're very healthy, and the organization, you know, is only looking forward. USA Boxing, we run a deficit week to week, month to month, year to year. We have absolutely no resources. And I think part of that is attributed to the fact that the board of directors, although very nice people and very committed, as everyone is in the sport, this is a sport that has a handful of people getting paid to run it, and they have over 9,000 volunteers. You know, people, as you know, Gabriel, are very passionate about the sport of boxing and are willing to give up a lot of their time and energy.
Yeah.
But the sport has moved. You know, the sport, if you look around the world and you look at those amateur programs that are succeeding, one, they are incredibly rich, and they get supported by their governments. We don't get any public funding whatsoever. We get some resources from the USOC, but if you're not doing well, they cut down on the amount of money that they plan to give you. Picture them as an investor, and are they going to invest in USA Boxing, an organization that has had nothing but failure, or are they going to put their money behind skiing or equestrian or some of these other sports? Equestrian is not a sport that I would particularly gravitate towards, but they're very successful. They get prime time on NBC. We haven't had any network coverage in years. And I've talked to John Miller and various people at NBC about giving us more exposure, and they laugh at us. Amateur boxing used to be prime time.
Right.
You remember, right, years ago?
Yeah.
I remember watching Henry Tillman defeat Mike Tyson in the Olympic qualifier. It was on ABC Wide World of Sports.
Yikes.
Full house,
yeah.
in Dallas.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that needs to be done.
Now, when you say there's a lot to be done, though, I mean, is there a map of what you guys want to follow to try to get it back in that state?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think what the USOC, the USOC got involved here, too, because they felt embarrassed by some of the shenanigans that took place within the board. There's going to be a transitional board, from what I understand. The USOC will appoint people that they choose from business or people who have been involved in boxing in the past who will help carry boxing maybe up through January of 2013. And then they will give USA Boxing another opportunity to put together a board of directors, but a board that is, you know, that has the ability to take the organization forward, a board that has the ability to help raise resources, not only being able to govern, but being able to bring money to the table.
Right. Yeah.
It's difficult to do when you haven't had any success. It's hard to sell a failure, but there are so many of us who really love the sport and want to do something about it, you know, whether they're through online auction or fundraisers. You know, it's going to take time, but they have to approach it more like a business than as sport, in my opinion.
What do you think about Aiba, one, pulling this move? I mean, it felt like, I called it a terrorist move earlier. I don't know if that's the right thing, but, I mean, they basically held everybody hostage until they threw that guy out into the street.
Yeah.
To not, you know, to be kind of blunt.
Yeah, well, they certainly have the authority to do that. And the USOC, wasn't going to do it. They would have rather AIBA do it. They didn't want to be the bad guy here. And, you know, AIBA is moving. They have a world plan. You know, their plan is to move into professional boxing.
Yeah.
And the United States, to them, is the big gold mine. You know, they look at Mr. Bob Arum and Golden Boy, and they look at the big pie, and they like to think they'd like to have a piece of that. Now, you know, so for them, they have a vested interest in the United States, and USA Boxing is very key and central to how they move forward. Whether they'll be successful or not is a whole other question. You know, I don't think it will be an easy task for them to step in and take business away from Mr. Arum or Mr. DeLoyer or Tom Loeffler or Kathy Duva or any of those people. You know, they protect their business as they should. Whether AIBA could be successful or not remains to be seen. The World Series of Boxing wasn't a great success here in the United States. Although
they're not even doing it here. They're not doing it here anymore, are they?
Well, there is some talk of them starting up a team in the United States, but they don't particularly have a venue. I've heard rumor that they may fight one bout in Los Angeles, another bout in Chicago, another bout in New York, until they find an investor. But it does have some legs in Europe. You know, it's popular in Eastern European countries.
The season's already going over there.
Do you think that it would even continue though here in the States with the fact is that there's I don't know if amateur fighters would be here in the United States would want to even join that program anymore because of what has happened. I mean, we've seen fighters from Javier Torres now turn pro and he has a blemished record before because he was involved in that. Do you think that's already kind of scared that off?
Yeah, I think so. They made a major mistake in not getting the clearance from the California State Athletic Commission. You know, they came into California without really clearing the pathway. I think I happen to know Javier. I love him. He's a great kid. And, you know, he comes to fight every night. And yet I think some of these kids weren't really apprised of the consequences. I don't think that it was clear to them that and the losses would be counted against their professional record. I mean, I think the WSB has had a number of hurdles, not the least of which is the American Boxing Commission group. All of the commissions are part of one group, and they have very strong feelings about whether professional boxing, mixing apples and oranges. Amateur boxing is one thing, but professional boxing is another. To have somebody to be able to fight professionally and then be able to access the Olympic Games through the amateur program has met with great resistance. And I think, you know, there are a lot of inherent problems to it. I'm not drawing a judgment, Craig. Yeah.
Right, right. And I completely understand the hurdles that they were going through, the World Series, but at the same time, those are their hurdles. I mean, I just don't understand how the fighters themselves are being punished for something that they were told to, and it was blatantly, it was not even covered or it wasn't explained right, or maybe there was just down that line, there wasn't a completion of resolving a situation, and they just went for it, you know? Tough deal, real tough deal.
It is, no question. No question.
Who do they have to answer to?
Who, the WSB?
Yeah, that's the thing that I've run into, you know, and I know we want to talk about the future. One of the things that you guys are working on in USA Boxing, I do want to get to that. But I'm just curious because I've been following this, you know, WSB story, you know that, and I can't get anybody to answer me back over there. CK Wu, none of them. And it's like they released all these guys and said, join us or fend for yourselves. It's kind of a Don King or, you know, what people would say maybe the gangster's move, not even really Don King. I don't want to even throw him under the bus like that.
Right.
It's kind of a ruthless move. And a lot of these guys are stuck with it. Eric Fowler, Javier Torres, most of the Matadors. But there's a lot of other guys. Jeff Camp, who was a kid brought out last season as a late season replacement, and they assured him it wouldn't count. And he lost the fight. And then never fought again. Now he's just 0-1.
Yeah.
You know, thanks.
Yeah, it's like a wash of hands of responsibility here.
So who do they answer to, do you think?
Well, you know, the organization is Ho Kim is really in charge of the WSB, and under Ho Kim, they have a management structure. You know, they're based in Lausanne, Switzerland. I mean, it's hard to get through to them. But I think, you know, they're trying something new, and I think in the course of doing that, they've made some mistakes.
Sure.
I'm not defending them, because I think a lot of the fighters were misled, and whether it was intentional or otherwise. George Dodd, I've talked to George about this when he was the acting commissioner, and, you know, he said that he made it very clear to the then governing body, the people who were running WSB United States, that this was the way it was. If you're fighting professionally, they're not going to allow these fighters to be able to step back into the amateur ranks without penalty. And
wow.
They weren't alone. They weren't alone in that regard. All the other commissions felt the same way, all but for one other state. Everybody was adamant about it. And I just think that they didn't do enough homework before they started. They started to run before they could walk. And by that point, it was too late. Maybe at some point, Javier and these guys, it may take litigation. You know, I know that it takes resources to do that. But at the same time, you know, their careers, who wants to start a professional career 0-4? What promoter is going to sign any of these guys?
Right.
You know, it's all about, you look at Mayweather, you know, the fact that he wants to go undefeated, let alone starting your career 0-4.
Yeah, they don't get even a chance at that. That's what kind of sucks. It's like, well, great, you know, and they all, what's not fair is that, you know, they'll introduce Javier as a 3-4 guy, and nobody knows that those four were like, I think, you know, one of them was in the gold medal round at the Olympics. You know, he's fought like top guys. Those losses were close fights. I was at most of them.
Gabriel, I have to say you're absolutely right. But there was another aspect of all of this. I was to a number of the fights in Los Angeles, and I have to say that when the Russian team came in, you know, I thought actually the Russians won 4 out of the 5 matches.
I agree.
And they wound up losing 4 out of the 5. So conversely, when the LA team would travel abroad, it would, regardless of whether they won 4 matches, they would lose all 4.
Right.
So it was a question of the home, you know, the home field got the victory. We see this in professional boxing too, from time to time, You know, it's unacceptable in my opinion. It's terrible when these kids, they, no different than in the Olympic Games, they work so hard to get to the Olympic Games, and they have a corrupt judge or official take the victory away from them. You know, Mr. Arum has said to me on numerous occasions, we shouldn't even be in the Olympic Games. Why are we going? Why participate when you have this kind of corruption?
Kids, yeah.
You know, it's out of their hands. They go with an open mind and, you know, all dreaming of standing on the medal podium, wanting to be the next Oscar De La Hoya or Sugar Ray Leonard or even Muhammad Ali. And never get the opportunity. Terrible.
And they're really not set up for that anyways. You know,
no.
I mean, the coverage was a little bit better this year. Probably the best in years.
I would have to say. Definitely.
You know, but you're right. I mean, the general public doesn't know who the hell these guys are. It's all the same hardcore guys in the niche sport that is professional boxing.
And I think the coverage is better. It was best for a long while. But I think we have to give credit to his social media. It had a lot to do with that, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the streams. So where do we go? Jumping off the WSB thing, I mean, I'm still following up on that. But where does USA Boxing go?
Well, I think USA Boxing has to look for the next few months, 3 to 4 months, to try to reorganize. And then I think what they need to do is try to go out and solicit some sponsorships, which is going to be very difficult. Gabriel, the key is they have no money. And you can't do anything without resources. One of the major problems we faced with getting our team ready for this Olympic cycle, if you talk to Evander Holyfield or Henry Tillman or any of the guys who were part of that 84 team, they traveled the world competing.
Right.
And today, most of the great amateur fighters are not in the United States. They're in Europe. So, and they have fights. They have world-class fights every week. You can literally fly to Germany, get on a bus, and travel around Europe for months, and every week, you know, fight against the top athletes in Europe. And we just didn't have the resources to send our kids there. So we need to increase the level of international competition. Of course, that requires funding. We need to build up our junior program. But more importantly, I think boxing needs to do a major shift in the sense that boxing needs to start to look to education as a core component. In the 60s, boxing was a major NCAA sport. Not only the 60s, the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah.
And at some point in the early 60s, there was a death in the ring at the University of Wisconsin, and they disbanded. And college boxing has remained, but as a club sport. And there is a strong movement today of which I'm actively involved, and there are a lot of interesting entrepreneurs and lawyers and investment bankers who are supporting this league, the college league, and some of the charter members are Georgetown, Maryland, Florida, University of Miami, Florida State, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, UCLA, USC, and there'll be and a host of others. And as this league begins to grow, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and Reno, all of these schools, it's going to grow. People want to see this sport back, and it will give, you hear all the time, Larry Merchant has said on numerous occasions, Art, the great athletes are not going into boxing. They're going into football, and they're going into basketball. Who wants to get beat up when they can go into these other sports? Well, take it a step further. Who wants to go in? Why would anyone go into boxing when there's no opportunity for them to advance through
right.
college, through scholarship grants? Even a mediocre basketball player on a good team will get at least a partial scholarship to college and have the opportunity to take himself out of, you know, what would otherwise be, you know, circumstances that may inhibit him from improving his life. So the opportunities, the goal is to create scholarships and bring athletes into the college program. As an example, some of the universities in this charter program are looking to Marlene Esparza and to Carissa Shields. We've got a gold medalist and a bronze medalist. Both of these girls have done well in school. They're very bright. Get them full scholarships. Make them the poster girls of the college program. They're inspirational. They inspire other people. Plus, they'll do great things for themselves. And that maybe generate more and more interest in the program. And frankly, I think it's a no-brainer. And I think that the whole sport needs to do a shift. And this college program brings sophistication. They bring state-of-the-art, digital delivery system and, you know, registration and all of those things that U.S. Boxing, unfortunately, has not had.
So, that would be actually, that's smart. I mean, when you work with the colleges, you talk about these guys know how to get the information out there. You're going to have, social media behind it. You start youth streaming or however, streaming all those all the amateur fights, as well as hopefully getting TV involved. How it's spread. You know, I mean, I start my Saturdays watching, you know, fights in England on my computer, all the way to watching, you know, the HBO fights on cable. You add in college boxing into the mix, particularly like I didn't go to college, so I don't understand people that are fanatical about their team. But people that do go to college, you know, imagine if USC or UCLA had a boxing team. That would be they do. You know, I had a friend that was working with them, but if that became something popular, you're right. I mean, that's you've got fans for life.
But you know, Gabriel, you talk also, about England. They have there's a great college program in England. Really
I was about to mention
college.
That right now. I was about to mention that and how in depth the rivalry is and how huge it is over there. You know,
and you know that they compete against the college programs here. One of the goals is to do an international competition between England and the best of England, the best of the United States colleges. And we're talking now to, looking at some venues and maybe some sponsorship. Well, look, this is going to take time to build. But there's no doubt in my mind that incorporating education and giving these kids the opportunity not only to get an education but to continue boxing, you know, as it is now, they don't have the opportunity to go to college, get a scholarship and box. It's either one, you go basketball or football. You want to box, generally they don't go to school. And now these kids box on the amateur level, they lose, they get discarded, and they're nowhere. At least they'll have an education and something to hang their hat on. So it's, it's a shift. It's a major shift, but I think one that's been a long time coming, and we hope to build on it. And I see, I receive, I I was able to get the endorsement from Bob Arum, from Tom Loeffler, from Kathy Duva, from Golden Boy. You know, these promoters see the value. Who wouldn't see the value in promoting education for this sport?
Now, when you say they see the value, is there a checkbook behind it?
Well, not yet. You know, not yet. I wanted to get their endorsement first before I got their check, but,
right.
You know, we'll see. You know, I have great respect for all those people, and I really enjoy working with them. And, you know,
Art, at the same time, I mean, you know, endorsement and having great respect for them, I just don't see how they wouldn't want to put money behind it, because to me it's almost a responsibility to make sure that this sport thrives and to get the best fighters from the world is to invest back into something that you know that's going to give them a more crop of fighters to get a hold of.
Right, right. Yeah, well, we'll see. Again, you know, we have to walk before we run, but everybody is behind it. We've got full support, and we've got some really terrific programs. University of Miami is a first-class program with some very influential people behind it. You know, gentlemen, I would love to continue. I'm at my kid's soccer practice, and soccer is over, and he's running around.
Oh, no problem, man.
Unattended, so I have to go fetch him. But I'd be happy to come back on the program. Anytime you invite me, I'd love to come back and talk more about it. And I'm
really
delighted you guys gave me the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak to us, man. I much, much appreciate it. And thank you. Enjoy the rest of your night.
All right, thank you, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Art.
Bye-bye.
Arthur Horan from the USA Boxing called in and spoke to us here a little bit about yesterday's suspension and the uplift. Also, the game plan of getting amateur boxing where it used to be at. You know, and it's always one of those things that you want to root for it, and you hope that whatever endorsement, whatever investment they're looking for and help financially, you want them to get that, you know. And I strongly believe, I think you feel the same way, Gabriel, that it's, to me, like Top Rank and Golden Boy and the Bellas and the Gary Shaws and Duvas, they have a responsibility. I think that there should be something in terms of, if you're going to be a promoter, that you have to break off a little bread to feed into the amateur to keep that stream of fighters coming through, that filter, you know?
And it's not like we're the NCAA where, you know, we try to pretend we're not dirty, you know? I mean, just filter the money down to the amateurs. Everybody should be paying in, you know? Like I said, I don't pretend to be a genius, you know, but Arthur's the executive vice president of global marketing for USA Boxing. So I thought it'd be somebody that really understands the financial end, understands the things that they're actively trying to change. You know, I mean, nobody knows USA Boxing exists unless you're a boxing fan. And you're right. I mean, I think we need to feed into it somehow. That sounds like an interesting plan, the college boxing, but at the same time, you want to get those kids, you know, that are his kids, is like soccer age. I don't want his kid playing soccer. I want that kid boxing. And how do we make that happen? And he's right. It used to be, you know, in high schools they would box. My dad talks about that. They had a boxing class. And it was just part of, like, gym, you know, that you learned how to – I think it's why that generation's a little tougher than ours, you know. They didn't have to worry about their dad teaching them or their dad not being around or having to learn to fight on the streets. They were learning in school. You know, and they were learning to appreciate this sport. And if you think about it, everybody says MMA is taking us over, and that's absolutely not true. But there's still wrestling programs in school, you know, in high school. They still start them very young. That's where their love of that begins and how they can understand what they're watching. They're used to two guys in leotards on the ground. They're not used to watching boxing. We're losing those generations.
You know, too, also – I think when we're speaking about generations, you know, how does a guy end up, how does a kid end up in a boxing gym, or how does a kid end up on a wrestling mat or a dojo? It's normally they either walk in on their own or a father takes them to it. And that's something I think that you can break, you know, fight fans that love the sport and they have children, a boy or girl, they still take their kids, you know, it's always that, I wonder how well my kid would do. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I walked in the gym and took my kids in, you know, for them to see that side, that beauty of the sweet science. So just going back, love to see amateur boxing get more glorified than like the way it used to be. I remember watching Oscar De La Hoya, you know, on networks, or even at the time when HBO, they were actually showing amateur fights. Not just all complete pro fights. They should show amateur fights. They were showing the tryouts before Oscar was going to the Olympics and stuff. I don't know if a lot of people remember that. I actually got that on a DVD somewhere around in my office. It's a huge mess right now. But let's patch in some fight fans, man. Let's talk some boxing here. A lot of fight fans are on hold right now. They want to talk about Emmanuel Stewart, and they want to share their memories here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with David, who wants to talk Emmanuel Stewart's passing away. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing good, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good, bro. You know, I get on the internet today, and you know how the internet sometimes is bogus, bro. You know, everybody's passing away, and I get a little bit more into it, and it's true, man. It's like I'm 41 years old, bro, and I saw, you know, the great, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard fight, Hearns, Hagler, you're talking about Durant, and you know Emmanuel Stewart was in the corner, man, with Tommy Hearns, you know, and it's just you know, it's one of those things, man. He's gonna be missed. His commentary on TV, you know, just his expertise in the ring, you know, all that will be missed, man. Emmanuel Stewart was he was a great figure in boxing.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
And,
yeah,
you know, on that subject that you were talking about that, you know, it all falls too, bro, on the parents. Got to take the kids in, you know? The parents got to see what your kid. I'm waiting for my 2 more years and my son will be in the ring.
There we go.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right, man. I was at the Rios Alvarado fight and everything, and this one guy stopped me and was like, Gabriel, you know, he was kind of hanging over the side. He was at a front row, but on the upper deck, which is great seats. And, like, staring right at the ring, perfect seats, really. And I walked over and said hello, and he had his two little boys with him, you know, and they were probably, like, I don't know, 8 or 9, and they were just sitting there watching the ring. They didn't care about me. They were watching the fight that was behind me.
Right.
And I just thought, dude, that's awesome right there. He's like, yep, I'm teaching them right, bringing my kids, you know. That's how you're right. It is kind of come up to the parents, too.
Yeah, it's a tradition, you know what I mean? And it's a tradition that we can't let go. You know, we got to keep it going. And at the same time, it's like when you go to church, you pay your tenths, you know, you give a dollar and $5 here. At the same time, I think, though, we're feeding into bringing our kids. We should help out the USA Boxing. If they're in shambles and they're hurting. But, you know, too, we kind of look at certain things. I don't know about you guys, but I'm one of those, you know, spectacle guys. I'm one of those guys that sit back and go, well, I want to make sure my money's being used for this. You know what I mean? I work hard for my money. You know, $5, $10, I don't care. I want to know where it goes. You know, and that same time that, you know, we had Arthur on, we asked those questions because if they're looking for funds and looking for donations and they're looking for people to endorse them and invest in them, well, at the same time, they have to show that. You know, just don't get a check and stay stale with it. You got to show how it's being worked and how it's being moved.
Yeah.
And right. that will bring more interest, you know, and get more corporations or business-minded people to look at the bigger picture, because there is money to be made in the amateurs. There is money, you know, in the future of these kids that join the amateur programs and prosper and move forward to becoming pros, you know. But they got to see the movie. You got to see the wheels turn. You got to see it moving. And then as soon as you see that, like you said, you know, we want to walk before we run. Well, when it starts running, that's when you start seeing people start piggybacking, riding it, you know, jumping on that wagon.
Yeah. But you know that there's fights all over Southern California, bro. Out here in Riverside where I'm at, you know, we got the Venegas Gyms, we got the Middlebrook Boxing Academy, and there's always amateur fights going on, but nobody promotes it.
Right. It's,
you know,
a lot of money sometimes
to promote. Nobody trying to get it out there. I mean, you know, somebody has to go out there and try to get it out to show these, you know, because you got, like, there's a lot of talent out here. The talent is there. You're seeing these young kids develop, man, and you can see them growing up, and you can see how they work behind a jab, man. It looks so cool watching a little kid do something, but there's no promotion. And then, you know, you got to travel, you got to, you know, and that's cool. I mean, I'm telling you, my kid turns 8 years old. We're gone. I'm going to take him with me. We're going to go watch fights. He's going to be in the ring. But, you know, as a parent, I mean, if your kid wants to play football, you have to pay for his uniform. You pay for his pads. You got to do a lot of stuff. So as a parent, if you want your kid to succeed in something, and I understand that a lot of parents are, oh, boxing is violent. Oh, it's a violent sport. My kid's going to get hit. Well, football's violent.
You know what I say to that? You know what I say to that? I've heard parents tell me that all the time. I said, does your kid play baseball? Yeah, he's going to get hit by a ball. Does your kid play football? Yeah, he's going to get stuck by a kid. You know, does he play soccer? Well, his chins and his knees are going to get damaged. Does he play hockey? He's probably going to be thrown head first into the ice. You know what?
Well,
that's what sports is about, you know?
You think about it, too. Nowadays, they've outlawed fucking dodgeball. They don't even we live in a culture where nobody loses anymore in elementary school because it hurts kids' feelings and it gives them complexes. I mean, think about back in the day. We had boxing in the schools.
Right.
And now we live in a world where dodgeball is just too rough and losing is just too painful. We've been pussified. And I don't mean that, you know, in a derogatory way towards females because they're some of the toughest beings on this planet. I just mean we're absolutely soft these days. We're afraid of ourselves.
I mean, I think from back in the days, Gabriel, I don't know about you guys, but I remember you had a dispute with somebody. Two kids would duke it out, and you know what? A lot of times there'd be parents right there, adults watching, or they'll put gloves on you. They're like, you guys got a problem? Get a pair of gloves. Duke it out. Now you don't even see things like that, you know? I honestly will tell you this, you know, and there's going to probably be some parents or some people that are going to disagree with me, but I honestly believe boxing builds character.
It does.
Builds confidence. You know, it really shows you how to control your temper. It shows you how to, you know, value yourself. At the same time, it shows you that, you know, it can show you how to be a winner and it can show you how to be a loser. That's what sports do for you.
Yeah. It's like John Wooden said, sports do not build character. They reveal it. And revealing character to yourself is very, very important. You know, I've learned a lot about myself in the ring, man. Learned a lot about myself. And if I ever decided to have – I'm never going to have kids, but I don't want them. But if I ever did, man, yeah, they would box or be in a martial art of some kind because, you know, learning how to handle yourself is a big part of being an adult, I think.
Absolutely. David, thank you very much, brother, for calling in. I'll put you back on
hold. Thank you for having me on the air, man. You guys have a great day.
You too, man. You too.
All right.
41, that's right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I'm 39. Emmanuel Stewart is a big part of our lives, a big part of our boxing lives. You know, that's all. He was peaking right when we were becoming aware of anything, much less boxing. You know, those are some of my earliest memories.
Yep.
Absolutely. So pissed when Hearns lost to Leonard. I was always an Emmanuel Stewart guy. Like, it wasn't. My affection for him, it doesn't just come from the fact that he was the first guy to really give me an interview in boxing, but the fact that I grew up and you know, like all of us, I mean, I loved Emmanuel Stewart and I loved Tommy Hearns in that right hand. You know, I was a fan of his and his fighters. He's just one of the best
in the business. I knew how to turn that right hand. You know, even his jab was phenomenal. It sounded like a right hand when he hit the hand mitts and stuff. Let's continue on. Let's get some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. 347-215-7598. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Mr. Gable Montoya. You got to get past behind the man on the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Let's pass in Marshall Kaufman, who wants to talk about the passing of Emmanuel Stewart here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live right now.
Hey, how's it going, guys? It's just want to mention the sad data here about Manny Stewart dying, man. He's a true legend and a great man on top of that.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
He's just a true ambassador of the sport, right?
Without doubt. I mean, he really was, and he never turned people away from talking to him or taking the time to, you know, shake hands to people who just wanted to get to know him and things of that sort. He was a true ambassador of the sport, and he's going to be missed in the sport, you know. I remember just growing up and watching him work the corner, and I've never seen a corner man work it the way Manny worked the corner. You know, he was the best in that corner.
Yeah, I think that's an underrated aspect of the job anymore. You know, you don't hear he was so like specific, and he was a guy that like he could give you specific directions, but he could also be a cheerleader. Like he had all aspects of what a corner man should be. You know, he's also one of those guys. His fighters were never out of shape. You know, a true old school trainer.
Oh, without a doubt, and he kept it real in the corner. You know, he kept it real. I mean, I saw a little clip of just today, a reminder of when he was working the corner with Jermaine Taylor against Fink. And you know, he was being real about it, you know, bottom line, you know, this is what you got to do, you know. But he knew how to change things up in the middle of the fight. If things weren't going well, he knew how to make adjustments. And for me, you know, growing up and becoming a trainer myself and things of that sort, he was the one that I looked up to try to emulate in that corner. And I'll never forget when I had Cintron and we were fighting Teddy Reed. It was right after the fourth round. It was a hell of a round. And when you're watching the HBO broadcast, you can hear Manny Stewart saying, well, if I was in this corner, I'd be telling him he better start boxing and using his legs again. No sooner they put the mic on me, and I'm saying the exact same thing. So it was just, you know, afterwards Manny and I were talking about it, and it was a pleasure knowing the man. And he never, you know, I just never heard him, you know, talk very bad about people or anything of that sort.
Yeah.
He was great for the sport of boxing, and that's what those type of people are what the sport of boxing needed.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and ambassador to a boxing preacher, he was one of a kind, man. There was just no way of replacing him. And I'll say it again. You know, I think boxing just lost a huge piece of what it's really made of and what it's about.
Without a doubt. And, you know, there's a few great trainers out there, but there will never be another Manuel Stewart.
No.
You know, there will never be another one. You know, and just what he meant to the sport, and just, you know, when you think of a tall fighter, and when you had guys who were tall fighters, who was the first trainer you wanted him to go with? You wanted him to go with
exactly.
Emmanuel Stewart, you know? Because he made a tall fighter stay tall, you know? And he helped them to learn how to use their jab well. And
exactly.
He's just he did more than just the boxing part of it, you know? I mean, look at what his relationship was like with Andy Lee, you know? I think that might have been the last fight he worked when Andy Lee
lost.
I know he was heartbroken from it. Yeah, I know he took it real hard as well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it was not. There's a lot of things around that loss. That was kind of his last contribution to the sport. Was him basically acknowledging that PEDs in the sport might be a problem, or that drug testing is lacking in the sport. And him, a guy like him coming out and kind of saying that, I think it meant a lot. I mean, some people might have called it sour grapes, but Texas has a long history, and Manuel has a long history of being just straight up honest. So, but you're right. He never said bad things about people. That's why I was so taken with the fact that he was so open about that, what happened in that fight. But you're absolutely right too about, I was just reading, looking, the Ring magazines came up, interview with Tommy Hearns. Is the first one since Emmanuel passed, and he said the same thing, that he was like a father figure to me, and that's how he was with Andy. I mean, moving guys in to the house and taking care of them, and
what I liked most about him was that he kept it real. You know, if he didn't feel you were doing something right, he was honest about it. He didn't try to sugarcoat anything, and he was real
and
about
if he,
it. You know,
yeah, and if he felt that his guy couldn't win that fight, he was honest about it too. You know, he would say it on the air. You know, I don't think he can beat him. I think this is the wrong time for us to fight this person. We need to stay away from him. You know, in so many ways and so many levels. You know, his honesty at the same time, his knowledge of the sport is like no other. You know, and he, like, you know, we lost a great friend and an ambassador, and also, like I said, a boxing preacher to the sport. Hey, Marshall, thanks for calling in, brother. We got to move on.
Sure thing,
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much.
Yeah, really.
Thank
you so much, Marshall. It's nice to hear your voice and to hear from you, man.
Yeah,
all right, man.
Definitely, guys. Thank you.
I'll talk to you soon. All right, then.
Really quick, Marshall Kaufman is a trainer himself. He's helped out his son and among other fighters and stuff here on Leaving the Ring, just to make that really quick.
Yeah, he was Kermit Cintron. So that's classy.
Because
Kermit went with Emmanuel after he left Marshall, and Marshall took him all the way to the first Margarito fight, undefeated, and should be credited for that. And for him to come on like that, that's speaks to the man's class.
Exactly.
It's very nice.
Absolutely, you know. Let's patch in our next guest here on Leaving the Ring, Javier Garcia. What's up, brother? You're on live on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, man, how's it going? Everything
doing
good here,
man.
On my part.
Right on, brother. Hey, man. Yeah, we're doing good over here. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us there. My name is Dave Duenas with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya.
Thanks for having me.
What a great back-and-forth war you had with Ramon, man. I mean, that was a fight. That really set the tone, I believe, at the Home Depot Center. You guys were mixing it up. It was a boxing slash back alley fight.
Yeah. It shouldn't have been that way, but it was. we're both a lot smarter than how we fought, I think. But we just did get some stuff off our chest, and pretty much it was.
Let's talk a little bit about what you were trying to get off.
Right.
I mean, you know, let me tell you this. Anytime two fighters have something on their chest and they're able to demonstrate it in the ring, it makes us fight fans very, very happy. But let's get into a little bit what was it exactly you were trying to get off your chest with Ramon?
Just the back and forth. I didn't really say much, but my little cousins and my friends, you know, on Facebook and all that stuff, kept going at it with their, you know, with their team, not necessarily him or you know, the main team, but the team, you know, and I would hear what they, you know, mad, you know, it started, you know, when they pulled out of the fight, first were scheduled, it wasn't a big deal, but I got me mad, you know, so yeah, pretty much. Like I said before, we both fought stupid. If you look at how Roman fights, that's definitely not how he fights, you know?
No.
And I know I could be a lot smarter than, I mean, I kind of do fight that way, but I know I'm a lot smarter than how I fought. Pretty much, you know, it's still made for three rounds, you know?
I've seen you fight, and I've seen him fight a bunch. I was there live at the fight, and it just, dude, it was tremendous. You guys set the bar. You know, it was just like. did you know that, like, when you came in? I mean, was there a moment in the fight where it just you were like, "Screw it, we're going at it," or was it? How did it happen?
Hold on a second.
Okay.
I thought he was about to correct you on something.
Yeah, like, look, we boxed elegantly. Yeah, what are you talking about, a brawl? Oh, no worries. When did you know you guys were going to just get it on? Or did it just start to happen?
Sorry about this, because Robert's talking to me right now.
Javier, I need you to walk somewhere else because you're breaking up. You're not coming through. I don't know if it's your phone or not.
Okay, no, it's because Robert was talking to me right now. Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I'm just curious, did you know it was going to break out like that, or had you planned to fight a different way and it just happened, or what?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess it started from the beginning, you know. Obviously, the first round, it was a good first round for us. It kind of pumped me up a lot more, you know, to fight the way I was fighting, which I shouldn't have, you know. Like I said, I'm a lot smarter than how I fought. It just wasn't the way we planned to fight, you know. We were planning a lot of moving, which I didn't do much, you know. A lot of moving, side to side movement, you know, all the stuff we practiced here in the gym. I didn't do pretty much at the fight. It was like you said, a boxing brawl, you know. Like you said, it's still made up for a good fight for three rounds, you know. And, you know, I'm glad we both did. Yeah. I'm glad we both got the crowd, you know, ready for the next few fights, especially
did
Brandon,
you
know.
Yeah. I mean, do you regret though? I mean, obviously you regret the way it ended. You know, you want to come out the winner. For you though, I mean, did you want to keep going or were you cool with them with the
you
cut?
You know what, man? I've never been cut before.
It
wasn't even that bad. It wasn't even that bad. Not that the bad wasn't bad. That cut wasn't bad. No, it was a bad cut, but it wasn't. I couldn't see on my left eye. which, you know, obviously was a big cut, but, you know, they say, you know, fighters get scared when they get cut, or, you know, the fighters that can't handle the blood. Panic.
Right.
No, definitely not. Nah, man.
Right.
I didn't panic. Actually, you know, in my head, I was like, you know, it must be a small cut. But when, you know, Robert, you know, I seen Robert's eyes, he was like, you know, like, I could see it was a big ass cut, you know. I was like, fuck, you know, I wanted to keep going, of course. But, it, you know, referee called it a headbutt. So, you know, that's it. You know, we'll go ahead and schedule a rematch, you know, might as well.
Did you feel like it was a headbutt? I didn't see. I mean, it was,
you know,
it's hard,
man,
to tell.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Fuck, I don't know what it was. If it was a hand or a headbutt, I'm not gonna lie. You know, it could have been a punch. I seen the fight and it looked like it was a punch, but I'm not sure. You know, I'm not gonna lie.
It's such a brawl.
It was fucking fast. Yeah.
Right.
All I remember is that you guys were in close and you pulled away. And all of a sudden, you were bleeding. That's how I remember it.
So, a few punches,
shit.
And then, So, it could have been, but like I said, we'll do the rematch. We'll do it. We'll do it again.
Do you think you want to do an immediate one, or do you want to, like, wait until? Because I think you guys are very well matched. You're going to go at it, no matter how you guys, whenever you guys fight next. Do you think it should be you have a title, or you guys are, you know, like a show box or something that? When it matters more, as opposed to the way you guys did. I mean, it obviously matters to your career, but you know what I mean.
I got they told me I'm suspended for 90 days, so because of the cut. So it's obviously going to be till next year. I'm assuming he's probably, you know, he wasn't cut or anything, so I'm assuming he's going to fight again. You know, maybe by the end of the year. You know, December. You know, depends, or I don't know when. You know, he'll probably have a few fights, so you know, we'll see. We'll see what they decide to do, and what Robert, you know, and my manager wanna do, pretty much. We'll see. I might have a 2-1 fight or something, and then we'll do with him, you know.
Javier, let me ask you. You're on the social network, and you know, you have your Twitter account. Let me ask you, how do you feel about some of the fans that feel that you quit? I'm looking at our Twitter account, and I see guys just going at it, saying that. They felt that you didn't want anymore. You were looking for a way out.
Nah.
What's your thought about that?
That's never me. We wanted the fight from the beginning, obviously. I dropped him. He dropped me. Third round, I came back strong in the third round, actually, I think. There's no quitting me, you know. I'm not going to quit. If the referee stops it, if my trainer wanted to stop me, you know, of course I'm going to keep going. But, there's no quitting me. People say that because they saw how I was grabbing. When he dropped me, I saw the fight, and I do look a lot worse than how when I dropped him. You know, he seems like it was when I dropped him, it was like more of a flash knockdown. And when he got me, it seemed like I was a little bit more hurt. I'm not gonna lie, I was a little hurt. But what made it worse was that. In my head, I said, okay, I might not win the round, so, you know, I'm going to play safe and grab and hold, and then I'll come back strong in the third round.
Which I think is the smart thing to do.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Having said that, I was going to say, that comes to show that I wasn't lost or I was really bad hurt, you know, where I'm in my head, I'm thinking this, you know, grabbing, holding on. Hey, I lost the round pretty much. It's going to be I probably have to drop him or twice, you know, to win the round or, you know, or get a tie, but I just played it safe, and I kept grabbing and holding, which it actually made it look a lot worse. I saw the tape. I saw the fight. So it made it look a lot worse, but, you know, I was just playing it smart. If you see, when I dropped him, he wasn't trying to hold me or grab me or anything like that. So I feel I was I did a smart thing there.
Let's talk a little bit.
Robert, in the dressing room, that's actually what he told me, too. He said, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen, but if he drops you, you know, make sure you don't try to be the warrior that you want to be, or try to, you know, please the fans, you know, be smart and grab and hold. So I kept that in mind. So, you know, I think that was pretty good.
I agree with you. You know, so many times we see young warriors that don't use that that holding method to try to escape it and regain their composure back and stuff. But I want to go, you dropped them, you said it was a flash knockdown. Do you think the reason why you got caught is like you go, okay, I got him. You know, I was able to hurt him. I was able to drop him. Now I'm going to open up and stand and trade with him. You think that was a big mistake?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, it kind of put me up to say, like, oh, shit, you know, I'm knocking him out already, you know. So, yeah, it made it worse. I wasn't fighting smart from the beginning, so it made it a lot worse. So it's fine. You know, learning experience, I see.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's good to have a fight like this, you know, early in your career as opposed to, well, I mean, late is it's pretty good too, as Brandon Rios showed. It's always good to have a nice war, but you got to learn from this that you carried emotion in. Your game plan went out the window, but man, what a fight. Just an unbelievable fight. I mean, it was pretty awesome.
Hey, I like hearing when people say, hey, man, your fight was badass.
It was a great fight. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, man. I love hearing that. When every time they kept saying, hey, your fight was badass, oh, man, I loved it. That's why I want to do it again.
You know? I was standing up the whole time, you know. I was standing up the whole time, double-fisted, yelling at the screen, like, yo, bring it, come on. It was a great fight. And, you know, just to mention this, too, really quick, obviously everybody's got their pick for fight of the year, but I think yours is like a runner-up for it. I think yours is, you know, almost fight
so
of the year.
Right? So far,
yeah,
right?
it was great, you know. If the Rios and Alvarado fight didn't have, you know, went a different route, I think you guys would have taken it, you know. Close to it.
So that was three rounds. Imagine we would have done eight. Fuck.
Oh, brutal. I don't think you guys would have made it. I mean, when both of you, because he looked like he was hurt, but he kind of like shook his head like, damn it, I got caught. And then when you went down, I was like, okay, this is going to end. And then the third round, it was pretty, just we're both still there. I was like, how long is this going to go? But it didn't have the pace of a fight that was going the distance. We knew it wasn't going to end. Maybe the headbutt is almost, in a way, kind of a blessing. You know, and I almost wonder if Robert, you know, the smart trainer that he is, kind of went, he's cut. He's been down. The other guy's been down. Like, let's just save the career for now. We'll do this fight again down the road when it matters. That's a smart dude.
That's a very smart, that's why Robert's, you know, one of the best right now, you know. He makes his decisions. I did look a lot more hurt, like we said. But I did come back strong the third round because I was smart, you know, grabbing and holding. And, it made me look a little bad, you know. I was quitting or whatever, but I think that was smart. We've seen a lot of fighters grab and hold and then knock somebody else out, you know. When Milana fought, he kept grabbing and holding versus Soto, and he knocked him out, you know. It's just, you know, different situations. The fact that there was a little, you know, not bad blood, but a little bit of it, made it seem like, oh, man, he quit already. Nah, I don't quit. Nah, never. Never. I'm a fighter, and I never quit.
I got to be honest. I didn't see that, you know, that as a method of quitting. I just saw that as a smart thing. Fernando Vargas, when he got hurt with Tito Trinidad, I didn't hear anybody saying he was being a quitter. He was holding on for dear life, you know, to survive, to move on forward, you know.
Hey, you got to, you know, sometimes, whoa, I don't know if we just lost you, but yeah, you got to hold on sometimes. It happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Dudes that complain about that kind of stuff, they've never
you
been
know what?
Knocked.
It's because they're not in there, you know.
Exactly.
All the fans of you know, the boxing critics and you know, the ones that watch a few big boxing fights and they think they're experts. You know, they're quick to judge and you know, I'm you know, being in the sport, it's not as easy as it looks. It's actually a really tough sport. It looks a lot easier, you know. Even in sparring, you know, I could do a lot, you know, great here in sparring with all these, you know, world-class fighters, but in a fight, it's a lot different. It's so much different. Little gloves, no headgear. You know, it's a lot different than what it seems. So, I don't know. It's, I mean, you got to be smart in there, and all these fans want to see, you know, blood and cuts and knockouts. And, you know, as a fighter, we do what we have to do to win. I thought I did something smart. I don't care what anybody says. It's my career, not theirs, and I'm just going to keep it that way. You know, listen to my corner, and it is what it is.
Hey, just to mention, too, your trainer, Robert Garcia, has been having, for the past, you know, 2 years, has been really successful with his fighters. How many trainers have you know, on both on the same night, you know, they have you know, the Rios and Dornier win, but at the same time, able to produce, he can able to say, hey, on the same card, I had two almost fight of the years, you know, on the same night. Not a lot of trainers can say that.
Robert's badass, man. I trust Robert. Whatever he says, I do. You know what I mean? I trust Robert to the fullest. And Warner, whatever, like I said, whatever he says, I'll do. I won't even question it because I know he's a very smart trainer and he's been there. So I trust whatever he says. Even in training, whatever he says, I'll do because, you know, he is world class and, you know, there's not a lot of them like him, you know. Plus, he's young, you know. We can get along easier.
That's right, man. I always forget how young Robert is. Hey, before we let you go, Javier, is it cool if we patch in a fight fan that wants to ask you a question about your fights?
Okay, no problem.
Okay, let's patch in Jimmy really quick who wants to ask you about your fights. Go ahead, Jimmy. You got Javier with you on live right now.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for putting me through. Much appreciated. Yeah, I don't have a question, fellas. I just want to tell him, from the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you for what he did for us in the ring. You know, we're huge fans of Bellos, and that fight was amazing. I don't want to hear anything about quitting. There was no quitting in there. That was nothing but just pure warrior status. And that was the smart thing to do. When he did get hurt, he held. That's what you do. You're there to win. And nobody can question his will, his drive, his tenacity, and his pure desire to win. I mean, what he came back from, and that, you guys are right, that was fight of the year. That was a candidate for fight of the year as well. and I just can't thank you enough. And Carlos, I think, man, I told you too, if you remember on Twitter, that was a fight that got my wife in tears. And in a good way. I mean, she was just, we were so into it that to look over at her face, because we love Bellos, by the way, but we're fans. But looking at her, I looked at her and she just had tears of like, just like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she just couldn't believe what she's seen. And for my wife to say after the fight, wow, what a warrior. There's no one should question Bellos at all. That's just pure love.
That gave me goosebumps, man. No homo.
And we just got to say thank you, man. From the bottom of our hearts, fellas, we just got to say
thank you. I'm glad, you know, I love hearing, you know, that my fights are good, you know, that they're, I love hearing that, you know. That's why I wanted, like I said, I want to do it again, you know, maybe a little bit smarter, but I still want to hear that same reaction. And, you know, I'm glad you guys appreciate, you know, that it's not as easy as it looks, you know, and I'm glad.
No, and it's a pure appreciation for you. And we thank you for all that you do in the ring, outside the ring, all your training, and just being a true champion for us, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it, man.
There you go, Jimmy.
Thank you guys for letting me come through. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem, man. No problem, man. Javier, man, thanks again, brother, for calling in and talking to us here on Leaving the Ring. Much appreciated. Like I said, it was all our pleasure. It was a great fight. We are going to keep rooting for you and your whole career. And I hope you guys get that rematch, man.
That'd be cool, man.
Yeah.
Hey, I think we deserve some TV time, right?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You should do it when it, you know, when there's more on the line. You should be on TV. You should be getting paid for that rematch because we know it's going to be a war. I mean,
that should be on Boxing After Dark. You know, that's not a no-brainer at all. You know, Boxing After Dark, that's what Boxing After Dark was produced for, so that we can have some great fights like that.
If we created some buzz in boxing, then I'm sure the promoters or the managers will hear about it, and they'll probably want to do that. So that'll be cool, man, being on TV, you know. I've been wanting to be on TV, and I've been working hard for it, man, since I came back. Hopefully it does happen, and thanks for having me. You know, I appreciate it. I hear about you guys a lot, so thanks for having me.
I hope it's all good, man, not just bad.
Shit. Well, hey, as long as they're talking.
Hey, just to let you know, I'm the nice one. He's the cabron, okay?
Wait, which one's me or, I mean, Gabriel or David?
Yeah.
Which one's the nice one?
I'm the nice one, David, brother.
David? All right. My brother? All right.
Yeah, my brother. Gabriel's the one Brandon would like to hit.
All right.
Tell him not to. He can hit me in the body. I kind of want to know what it's like, but
not the face.
Get hit in the body?
But the face.
It hurts more when you get hit in the body than in the face.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It hurts. Actually, actually, Robert, my uncle, we sparred when I was, what, like 14, 15 years old, and he dropped me to the body like 20 times. I kept getting up because I didn't want to go down, and the last one, he got me a good one. I just couldn't get up anymore. He dropped me about, I could say about 7 to 10 times, but I kept getting up, but it was to the body end, worst of all.
Yeah, though I've been hit. I mean, my trainer's a heavyweight, Justin Fortune, and that's the only place he can hit me. So we'll do body punching today. And, dude, yeah, I mean, he just laughs at the sounds he can make me make, you know? he almost got knocked down from laughing. Yeah, it's horrible.
You hear that?
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. The moaning, right?
Yeah, it's and he'll start laughing and almost fall over just from laughing, you know? And no, I'm curious how hard Brandon hits to the body. It looks brutal. You haven't been in with him, have you?
With Brandon? I've sparred all the time with him.
Oh, really?
With Brandon, right? Yeah. I fought with him all the time. I was helping him for this fight, actually, too.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah,
What's he like with the body?
You know what? I haven't really got that many body shots from him, like good ones, but he just wears you down, Brandon. I could do a good 4 or 5 rounds with him, and after that, he'll beat my ass. You know, he's just a lot of pressure, and he's a lot bigger than me, so... him is pressure, you know.
It's constant.
Yeah, constant pressure, and he knows that that's his game, to put a lot of pressure and wear their opponents down. So he knows he's got it in the later rounds, you know. If it comes early, it'll come early, but, you know, most likely it'll be in the later rounds because he knows, you know.
His sparring is almost as like his you know, TV fights. You know, I've seen him spar. I went down there to Garcia's gym, and well, actually it was when it was being remodeled. He was down where Sergio Martinez used to work out at, and I was watching Brandon, and I was like, man, this guy, he has one mode, and that's it. You know, he just comes forward, and you know, he's got these very subtle skills that people don't appreciate. But that uppercut, he was working that uppercut back then, and he's got one of the best in the business.
And also, people don't realize that for this fight, he did get hit, you know, but most of the time he has a badass defense. It's badass, like even in sparring, like to hit him, it's pretty hard to hit him. It's not as because he comes forward, people assume that he gets hit a lot. But in reality, he hasn't really been cut. He hasn't, you know, he don't come out bruised up that much. This fight, he did get a little bit hurt, but that's because Alvarado, you know, it's Alvarado.
Right.
He does fight like him, you know. We knew it was going to be a brawl, but for
I've talked to him about that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've actually talked to him about that defense and say, you know, a lot of folks don't really pay attention to the defense. Yeah. It's on a YouTube. I'll retweet it for you so you can check it out. And I actually talked to him about his defense and how some folks don't really see how he pairs. He keeps his gloves up high, and he pairs a lot of those shots to, you know, deflects them. So, there's an appreciation there that it's almost he kind of carries almost a bit of a lost art that a lot of folks don't do still yet.
His offense is his defense. If you look at when he fought this fight with Alvarado, Alvarado would come through with some shots, and if Brandon himself would have just let go and just you know pulled back, he would have kept getting hit. But if you see the fight again, Alvarado comes back. I mean, comes with some shots, and then Brandon comes back. You know what I mean? Like, he don't let him get on him. You know, it's Brandon trying to, you know, be on top of it, you know, like it's his offense is his defense, you know, and pretty much if he doesn't, you know, attack, you know, that he'll probably get hit a lot more.
Hey, am I the only one that's alone still that wants to see the Ortiz and Rios fight?
you know, I think, you know, I don't know, maybe if you ask the fans, you know, like me, we don't care. I don't care. I don't want to.
I don't think he's ever going to fight again.
You don't think so?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, that's just my guess. Ortiz, he's got to do that second surgery. I don't know.
Who would they put him up against? Who would they put him up against?
That's what I mean. Would you put him up against a smaller dude, 140-pounder like Josecito again? Or
I say, why not? Give him the rematch, you know?
That's a viable rematch, yeah. I mean, I'd watch it again. Yeah. I wonder if he wants to keep going or... I don't know.
Lopez needs another big payday. Give it to him. You know, he deserves it, man. Javier, man. Hey, thanks, brother. I got to let you go. We got to patch in our next guest. Right. It was fun having you on. We got to get you back on
thanks
again.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun, man. I'll see you guys. I'll talk to you guys later.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
All right, bye.
Take care. You know, I don't know if is our next guest on the line?
I believe so. I believe we got Rich with us here on Live on Leaving the Ring, our next guest.
Awesome.
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir. How you doing?
I'm well. How you doing?
We're doing fantastic. Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring.
I'm happy to do it. Thanks for having me on tonight.
It's kind of a heavy day for boxing with the passing of Emmanuel Stewart. I know we have... We want to talk about the Nevada Hall of Fame, but I wanted to know if you had any words about Emmanuel, and I'm sure you've talked to him a number of times over the years and probably have many great memories. If you wanted to share anything or your thoughts on that.
Well, he used to come on my radio boxing show many times, Rich Murata's Neutral Corner. He was always available. And even before I started doing that show in Los Angeles, for many years, and I go back to the early 80s, Emmanuel was one of those guys who basically when I was first getting started covering boxing was not only willing to talk but treating me like I was someone who counted, someone who was important, you know, and when I was just a reporter. And that was something that I found about, that was not phony. Emmanuel was a number of things. Of course, a great trainer, but he loved the sport and a great guy. And if I can just quickly, you know, go through some of those things I'm talking about. I mean, you cannot argue with his legacy in terms of training, you know, because he goes back to the 70s, you know, with Tomer Kenthe and Jimmy Paul, into the 80s with Thomas Hearns, of course, his most famous pupil, into the 90s with Lennox Lewis, who needed some turning around after his loss to Oliver McCall, and then into the 2000s with Vladimir Klitschko. And one thing I found out about Emmanuel, you know, in terms of his training abilities, is that he was able to take fighters from the very beginning of their career and turn them into a champion, or take a guy in the middle of his career or even when he'd already reached greatness and improve on them, and you know, which is a very difficult thing to do and a fine line to walk for a lot of trainers. So I thought he had all the attributes of the great trainer. I mean, he was a tremendous conditioner, an outstanding conditioner of fighters. He was a master strategist before a fight. And then, guys, you know, in the corner with his fighters, he was really good. He, if you ever, and I'm sure you guys have noticed this, or you, anytime you watch tapes, you if you notice the in-corner conversations that he's having with his fighters, they're honest. So he will give a fighter an honest viewpoint of what's happening during the course of the fight. But I was thinking about this today, you know, and I was thinking about the many times that he, as a trainer, and whether you're a manager or a coach in a sport, you got to know how to push the right buttons for a particular athlete. And with Emmanuel, he was able to get the most out of his fighters. I think back to the second fight that he had with Thomas Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard, the second Hearns-Leonard fight. And after it was about, I think it was the sixth or seventh round, and Hearns came back to his corner, and he'd been badly hurt by Leonard, and after having an early lead and knocking Leonard down in the second round. And when they got back to the corner, Hearns was very discouraged, but Emmanuel was upbeat, and he was going, "This is what makes a great fighter. This is what makes a great fighter." And you could almost see it pick up Thomas Hearns. Now contrast that, you know, that father-son kind of thing, to when he had Jermaine Taylor, and Jermaine Taylor fought Corey Spinks. You guys probably remember him just yelling bloody murder at Jermaine Taylor during the course. Every time Taylor would come back to the corner at the end of a round, he'd be screaming at him. And then they'd fight Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson. And it was after like the sixth and seventh rounds. He was getting so pissed at Lennox, screaming at him, "What are you doing? Get this guy out of here. He wants to lose. Right. Get him out." And he's pushing him and hitting him in the corner. And, of course, Lennox in the next round or two did that. So, You know, I just, like everybody, you know, I loved Emmanuel Stewart. And you know, he was always great to be around. I'll miss him being around at the big fights, you know, because you love to talk to those guys. You guys know when we sit around in those press rooms before the big fights and have a chance to sit down with these greats, these icons, and just get stories, pick their brains, you know. And
That's better than the fights a lot of the time.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. And, I think, geez, we lost Angelo Dundee last year.
Right.
Who, you know, we felt the same way about, you know, I mean, and now Emmanuel. So we're losing some icons, guys.
Rich, really, really quick, we have Rich Marotta with us here on Leaving the Ring, second hour of the show right now. But let me, because, you know, we were talking about that, about Emmanuel Stewart, about how he would become animated and just put that extra motivation to his fighters. But at the same time, he had that charisma of a professional. He knew how to come across on television. And, you know, I've always been fascinated that this was a professional guy that didn't have those certain guidelines of doing that as other folks went through, you know, through the college university system. This was a guy that came off the streets, became a great trainer, at the same time learned the craft and was able to utilize everything that his personality was able to dish out. How difficult, and I think a lot of people out there don't understand how difficult it is to separate, you know, these personalities, but at the same time be able to combine them and make them both look beautiful.
Yeah, well, you know, and in terms of a guy who's that great at his craft, at training, you know, you would think that at times it's very difficult for a guy to accept people who don't understand that, or who know less than what he is talking about, whether it be on the air, on television, on HBO, or in the corner. But Emmanuel loved the sport and was respectful of people enough to be able to combine all of those aspects. It's a difficult thing, and you know, to me, Emmanuel excelled at everything. He excelled at everything that he tried, and you know, I'm just blown away by what happened today and the death of Emmanuel Stewart, because, you know, boxing needs people like him badly. Every sport needs people like him, but boxing in particular, I think, needed people like Emmanuel.
I agree strongly with you about that. Let's get a little into about the Nevada Hall of Fame here. I'm not sure if we lost Gabriel.
Oh,
Gabriel.
Yeah. I muted myself.
Oh, don't mute yourself, Gabriel.
I've
never heard Gabriel muted before.
I know. first Golden Boy, now me.
In all these years.
No, I actually just pulled the Golden Boy on myself. just emailed me. I won't say who, but just something lovely to kind of cap this. I completely agree with you, what you said, Rich, about Emmanuel. And it says, attached is an article from February 28, 1963 in the Chicago Tribune on the writer listed winners of the National Golden Gloves. And I won't read the whole email. But at 118 pounds is found the name of a 16-year-old named Emmanuel Stewart.
Wow.
Even then, he did Detroit proud, as he would the rest of his life.
Yeah,
it's pretty beautiful stuff, you know. And they sent me the article, and it's just pretty cool seeing his name, you know. And there he is. But
I do think that Emmanuel knew how people feel about him,
mm-hmm.
Which you don't want for somebody to pass away and pass into history, and he never knew that. But I think he really knew how what high regard he was held in by every aspect, by the fighters, by the media.
Right.
By the fans.
He earned it.
That's right.
You know, and every time out he did. I mean, like we were talking about him earlier, you'd see him at the fights and he'd just be surrounded by people and he wouldn't turn people away. It was his job to spread the boxing love, you know, and interact with everybody and have them come away with a story. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been hit with a lot of people that have Emmanuel Stewart stories, you know, and that's pretty amazing for one guy to reach out like that. You know.
Yeah, and he did it, and you know, I think he had a lover of the sport, a great love of the sport, which came through in his enthusiasm. Do you remember him on the Ward Gotti fight? How excited he was. I mean, during the course of, I mean, we all were, but basically, he was speaking for the fans, you know, you know, he loved a good fight. He's just like all the rest of us that way.
Absolutely.
But you know, one thing about Emmanuel, too, when he'd see a good fight, How many times in the first round could he identify the key things and tell you exactly what was going to happen? And he did it.
Yeah.
He did it many times. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this fight is playing out exactly how I've had how I see it. You know, you'd always say that. You know, and he was dead on. He was very, when he was in his prime and really, you know, I think as he got older, maybe the eye wasn't as good, but everybody has an off night or everybody has an off time. But Emmanuel, more often than not, could really read a fight. And particularly talking to him before or after a fight, you know, I always loved his kind of post-fight breakdown and things to look for, like you said, heading into the fight. But I think Marshall Kaufman called earlier, and he said exactly what you said, that in the corner he was honest. I've never heard Emmanuel say to a fighter, "You're winning," when he wasn't.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And he loved it. He loved the knockout, and he loved a good scrap. And I think I know he was looking at the next generation of kind of quote unquote cool guys that look good on the poster, but don't really want to mix it up and really get in there and prove greatness. He looked at them, you know, kind of like, where is the sport going? I think he was in mind with a lot of us in that regard. But man,
absolutely,
he'll be.
It was interesting too with Emmanuel that he really was good with big guys, big fighters.
That was the.
I don't mean big name. I mean big, you know,
right.
In size. He had that touch. He has that touch, which he first showed with Hearns, even because Hearns was a big welterweight, and became a big middleweight. But then, you know, when he got his hands on some heavyweights, he really, I think, that was Emmanuel at his best for whatever reasons. When he got with those bigger fighters, I mean, he really knew how to get the best out of them.
That's interesting, yeah, because he wasn't a big guy. He was
a
bantamweight, you know?
Right.
It is very interesting.
He just knew how they mechanically, how they moved, you know, and I think that was the mystery of how a smaller guy was able to understand the movement and the adjustments and how to adjust them to fit the game plan that was in his head. That's the amazing part about him.
It's just tremendous. I got to actually watch him work one day with Cintron before a fight out here in Los Angeles.
Right.
And it was just one of those great pleasures. Andy Lee was there, I was there, and those two. And we were just all alone. And they're just working the mitts. It was like one of my first things I covered in Los Angeles. And it's just, Emmanuel was just awesome. I remember him coming in, and he was wearing just a normal shirt. And I actually saw him create one of his sleeveless Kronk shirts. Like pulled out, you know, the same scissors you use for the gauze. He cut off the sleeves of his own shirt and changed into a new shirt so he could work out. And I was like, well, that's how those sleeves come off, you know? He cuts them off himself. This is kind of weird little detail. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, you know, he knew how great a trainer he was. He knows it. He has a very good sense of himself, right?
Oh,
and what
yeah,
he is,
yeah.
Right? But
right.
He didn't lord it over everybody with that. And he didn't act like he's the greatest, or run around acting like he's the greatest, or having to tell people that.
That was actually, surprising. There was no entourage. Manny got out of the car, grabbed his stuff. He carried all the equipment in. You know, the fighter kind of carried his own stuff in. It was just three dudes.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's
this is a legendary Emmanuel Stewart. He's carrying his own stuff. That's pretty
right.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was. We'll miss him. That's a real loss for us.
Yeah,
it is. Well, let's move to the. To the future, and really, you know, your organization is going to be honoring men like Emmanuel Stewart. Talk to me about the Nevada State Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm not even getting the name right.
We just got the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. We just got it launched basically this week, although we've been working on it for a few months. But there were things that we wanted to do because, you know, we did want the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame to be a non-profit, completely charitable corporation. So we had to go through the... through the hoops and the bells and whistles of working with the Secretary of State's office in Nevada, and then even more so with the IRS, in order to get approval as a nonprofit tax exempt organization, what they call the 501c3 approval.
Mm-hmm.
And when we finally did that, in the meantime, we were working on getting the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame established and building it from the bottom up. Basically, it was a thought that I had. You know, a year ago, I got inducted first into the Southern California Sportscasters Hall of Fame and then into the California Boxing Hall of Fame. And it was after I went into the California Boxing Hall of Fame, I thought, you know, this is really cool. I'm going to investigate, since I've moved to Reno, Nevada now, I'm going to investigate the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame and see what it's all about, and I'll support it. I'll go to its dinners and, you know, and try to get involved with it. And much to my surprise and astonishment, there was no Nevada State Boxing Hall of Fame. So that's where the idea came from, basically. And basically, I started it this year. I formed a wide-ranging and, I thought, a really terrific board of directors made up of boxing people. First of all, no active promoters or active fighters, but we selected people from within the boxing business. For example, a retired fighter like Wayne McCullough, former WBC bantamweight champ, a retired referee, Richard Steele. And then we got people like that from the sport. We got business people. We got media people who have covered the sport of boxing. For example, Kevin Ioli, the Yahoo Sports boxing editor and longtime columnist, very well-respected member of the media and who has lived himself in Nevada. And our board of directors is made up of all Nevada people. It's all Nevada people. And then we also put together an advisory board from people outside of Nevada who I could call and ask for some advice or pick their brains about certain things. And so we're ready to go. We announced it this week on Tuesday, a Nevada State Boxing Hall of Fame. So Nevada, which unlike California and Connecticut and Pennsylvania and Florida and New Jersey and Washington and Minnesota, all had state boxing halls of fame. And just this year, the New York had its first initial inductee class with a state boxing hall of fame. And now we are underway, and we will announce our first class of inductees in about a month. And then next year, next summer, we will have actually the induction ceremony, and we are anticipating a big gala, a big, huge night of for the fans and for the sport of boxing in Las Vegas and in Nevada.
Wow, that's spectacular. I mean, I think, you know, people kind of say, oh, we need a new ranking system or a new Hall of Fame. Like, you know, we need other things besides that. But would you agree that, I mean, these things, when we celebrate fighters in this fashion, this can feed into the sport, kind of a positive energy and an educational wing, too, as well. People can learn about the history of the sport.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that we are going to do that we think is going to separate us from the other state boxing halls of fame, not all of them, but some of them, kind of set us out, is we're going to have several events during the course of the year. The centerpiece event will, of course, be the annual induction ceremony and dinner. But we are going to, before we even have that, we are going to have what we're calling a night with the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. We're going to have one in Las Vegas in the spring. We're also going to have one up in Reno, Nevada. These are going to be informal events before we ever have an induction ceremony. These are going to be informal events. We're going to invite fans to mix with inductees, with boxers, people from the boxing community. We'll show some tapes. We'll have a panel discussion. We'll have some media there. And these are going to take place. And this is that kind of educational thing and kind of bringing that boxing community together. Nevada, let's face it, it's a very passionate fan base. I mean, it's tremendous. And this is going to be a great chance for the fan base in Nevada to get together with the people from within the sport, and not just on the induction ceremony, which of course will be open to the public, but on these informal events that we're going to have as well.
What do you start off with the inductees in this one? Is this going to be how far back in the past are you guys going to go, or how is that going to go about when you induct somebody?
Well, you know, most of the there were famous fights in Nevada that took place, you know, around or near the turn of the century. Bob Fitzsimmons against Jim Corbett, and Jack Johnson, of course, against Jim Jeffries, the Great White Hope fight. But really, the history of boxing in Nevada, as far as when it takes place and takes off, is really basically from 1960. On. Now, if we find that we want to induct a pioneer, for example, we will induct that and have that person also on the ballot. But most you're going to see is going to be basically what has happened in the last 50 years of boxing. because that's when boxing really became big, and it had its a heavyweight championship fight in Nevada in 1963, July 22nd, 1963, when Sonny Liston fought Floyd Patterson. And basically, from that point on, prior to that, there were a couple of title fights that took place in Nevada, but it'll be mostly from 1960 on, basically. And believe me, of course, we're going to have a large number of people that we're going to be able to honor, and not just from the boxers themselves. Of course, they'll be the main event. The boxers, and we're going to do a little something interesting that I'll let you guys in on. Under the umbrella of the boxers, we are going to have because not that many fighters, great fighters, no matter how many great fighters have fought here and how many times they've fought here, we don't have that many that actually were born in Nevada or lived
right
in Nevada during the. So we are actually splitting up the boxer category. Each year we will honor from the what we would call the non-resident category and also the resident category. And just to give you an example, and I'm not saying who's going to be inducted into the first year because we haven't even voted on it yet, but for example, amongst the non-residents, for example, people who have fought here a lot of times, you know, a lot of world championship times, Larry Holmes fought in Nevada 23 times. He fought 19 world title fights here. Julio Cesar Chavez fought 25 times in Nevada. Thomas Hearns fought 17 times. Felix Trinidad 10 times. George Foreman 13 times. De La Hoya 30 times. 24 title fights. Marco Antonio Barrera fought 19 times. Now, none of these people were residents
wow
of Nevada, but they significantly contributed to the growth of boxing and moving the sport forward in Nevada.
Wow.
Now, on the other hand, we will have those people who lived a certain amount of time in Nevada and are residents of Nevada who will certainly be inducted in the future. People like, and I'm not, again, not saying who's going to be in this year because we don't know. We haven't voted yet. But I mean, there are the Mike Tysons and the Chris Birds and the Diego Chico Corrales and the Mike McCallums and the Livingstone Brambles and Cornelius Boza Edwards and Eddie Mustafa Muhammad and Roger Mayweather, the Black Mamba. I mean, these are all Nevada residents. So, you know, those. So we will actually split the boxer category into a Nevada resident and non-resident category within that big umbrella. And then we're going to have we'll honor every year, non-boxer participants like trainers and managers, officials, referees, judges, the media. We're going to induct people from the media, from promotions, of course, special contributors here. We'll also
right
have that to come so that we have that kind of miscellaneous category for people that really meant a lot to the sport of boxing. But we're hoping it's going to be something very special and something that the fans will participate in Nevada, or maybe even those fans who live outside of Nevada will want to come and, you know, take part in the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame when we have our Nights with the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame or our induction ceremony or even our golf tournament that we're planning for the late spring as well.
Sweet. Yeah, this sounds like a lot. It sounds really exciting. I can't wait for it to launch me and Gable, we live so close. Well, not that close. You know, I'm about
close
like,
enough.
Close enough for us to travel, and you know, because it's something that's needed over here too, as well as in the West Coast. You know, and really get fight fans together and head out to an event like that. I can't
right
wait for you to do it.
And thank you for that. Yeah, and one of the things we're going to do too is not only induct fighters into the Hall of Fame, but we'll have a yearly annual awards because we want to be Nevada centric. That's why we have that resident part for the boxers as well. But we're going to be Nevada centric, and each year we're going to give a Nevada Fighter of the Year award, a Nevada Female Fighter of the Year, a Nevada Amateur Fighter of the Year. We're going to give those people awards as well and recognize those people. And if you don't mind, just take another minute or two with me, guys. You know. As a nonprofit charity organization, I want everybody to know, you know, you can donate to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame or purchase tickets. Those are all tax exempt. But what we're going to do, we are going to try to help those from the boxing community who are in need of assistance. You know, we all know of fighters who are down on their luck. We hear these terrible stories of guys, you know, who are great fighters, and you find them on Skid Row, or you find them having medical problems, and they don't have their resources, they've blown through their money or whatever. We're going to try to give those guys a hand, and or their families a hand if they're, in fact, deceased. And we're going to contribute as well to youth programs here in Nevada, gyms, and something that, that I don't, again, I don't think anybody else does. But we are also at the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame committing to supporting the club boxing programs that they have at the University of Nevada in Reno and at UNLV. They have a collegiate boxing team at University of Nevada and also at UNLV. And there are schools and the military academies who have a National Collegiate Boxing Association.
Right.
And they compete against each other. And we're going to try to help those out. You know, those are all self-sustaining. They're not varsity sports. They're club sports. So
right.
they're not varsity sports. They don't get support from the state. They don't get they only get support from donations, you know. So from the donations that we get at the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, we're going to try to help out those programs through donations and through scholarships if we can. Find a deserving boxer at the University of Nevada in Reno and also one at UNLV each year that we can award a scholarship to.
You know, and I applaud that a whole lot, Rich, because it's so needed and it's so important, you know. Myself and Gabriel, we're not doing something as similar to what you're doing. That's huge. But what we do is we do a thing called the Ustream. We go out to gyms to show recognition and for fight fans that have support, and we were able to Ustream and show the other aspect of boxing, you know, of the trainers and amateur fighters that are working out of these gyms. So hearing what you're doing right now, I think that's a big benefactor for fans to try to help out our sport. Because I said before, you know, don't be just one of the guys that sit there and watch it. You know, if you love the sport, contribute to it by helping out our youth.
Right. And believe me, there's a lot of areas where we can help out, and we're going to definitely try to do that and see what we can. We'll need support from the public. We'll need support from promoters, boxing organizations, whatever. But if we can get that and we can get people to come to our events, and I think we will, because I know that boxing fans love to mix with the boxing community. If we can do that, then I think it's going to be a win-win-win situation for everybody.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's you know, I really like the idea, and I think, you know, today's show has been really a theme, I mean, recognizing a man in Emmanuel Stewart who gave his life to this sport, you know, from the amateurs to the pros, gave us all so many memories. I mean, like, I'm 39, one of the callers before is like 41, Dave's close to our age, and we're all right in that wheelhouse. Emmanuel helped us fall in love with the sport, but we also had somebody from USA Boxing on, and they're talking about everything that amateur program needs to do to get to the next level, and then this, it really does kind of come full circle, and I'm excited about it, man. And you know, I don't get to go out to Canastota. I'm actually not a member of the BWAA anymore, but I gladly will come out and support your events. I'm really excited.
Oh, thanks.
About
I appreciate that, guys, and I hope all your listeners are able to help out too and come on out and support us. And I think it's not going to just be supporting us, or, you know, I mean, it's going to be a fun. It's going to be fun. I mean, they're going to be great nights. I mean, and we should have a great time mixing everybody. You know, the media and the boxing community, the boxers and the fans, and kind of giving back. We're all kind of giving back to each other, I think, in that way.
Absolutely. You know, a boxing expo along with the Hall of Fame all mixed in one. That's just a recipe of a great, great night. Rich, thank you a whole lot again for taking your time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. And like we said, like Gabriel said, you have our full support on this.
Thanks. I appreciate that, guys. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to give the web address out for everybody. You can go and check us out at NVBHOF. Those are the letters standing for Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, NVBHOF.com. And you can like us on Facebook by visiting Facebook.com/NVBHOF. And you can follow us on Twitter at NVBHOF.
Awesome. There you go.
All right.
So, thank you so much, sir.
Hopefully
we'll talk to you again. We'll be announcing our first class of inductees, guys, in about a month. So maybe we can get together again then and we'll talk about it.
Absolutely. Rich Marotta with us here on Leaving Ring. Definitely.
I love it.
Yep. Definitely get you back on so we can hear those inductees.
Yeah.
All right,
absolutely.
Guys. Thanks very much and continued success with your show.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
All right.
We got to keep it moving. Got to keep it moving here over here on Leaving the Ring. We still got a lot of callers here that want to talk about Emmanuel Stewart's, you know, career and the ending, the sad ending of his passing away this earlier. But, you know, fight fans do want to still discuss Danny Garcia and Eric Morales and that past weekend undercard. But we got to patch in our next guest who, at the same time, you know, with the theme, the original theme of Leaving the Ring, we're going to be talking about the potential fight of the year fights. And, you know, we've been focusing on Emmanuel Stewart, but we're going to try to continue and fit that theme of the subject we wanted to do. And one of the part of that subject was early on in the beginning of 2012 in Las Vegas was against Guy Robb. Joel Diaz Jr. is on live with us and has been on with us numerous times. Well, what's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
How's it going, man?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Thank you for having me on the show right now.
So, you were super active, and then you've slowed down a bit. You know, how are things going for yourself right now?
We're doing good, man. Up here in Big Bear right now, training for. We're actually just staying on the grind. You know, we actually had a bout on November 17th, but somehow both promoters weren't managing the right end. Well, you know, everybody knows how that goes, but. We're still here, man. We're still here, just training and for whoever wants to step up to the plate. You know, we're here on our grind, and whatever happens.
Do you think you're at the point? Hey, what's up, JD? I haven't talked to you in a while. It's Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel, how's it going, man?
Good, man. We're trying to. You know, I know you're not feeling like yourself, so we figure we get you on the show, kind of shake you up a little bit.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I don't, we don't want to get into the whole November 17th thing. I mean, that's like you said, it's kind of between the promoters, and I'm not even sure what happened there.
Right.
But,
I mean, did you have to kind of like go through a camp and then take a little bit of time off so you don't go stale and then kind of restart? What have you been doing during this period?
Actually, I've just been on the grind, man. Just been on it since I got told that I was going to fight on November 17th, and then all of a sudden that. They told me that I was going to end up fighting no more, but, you know, that it didn't really slow me down. It kind of got me off guard, you know, because I was looking forward to that fight and getting ready. And I started training camp a little early, but, I mean, ain't nothing we could do about it, just continue training, you know. But, I mean, it ain't a big thing, I guess. I guess this will happen in boxing. It is what it is, man. It is what it is.
Do you feel, I mean, you're fighting at 130, you still feel comfortable there? I mean, you're getting older now. I mean, you know, not that much older, you're only 20, but with this time off, I mean, do you feel like, do you feel like 130, you're cool? I mean, you haven't fought since August. I'm just curious, do you stay near the weight? Do you feel comfortable doing that? I mean, I'm just curious.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I don't know.
Now,
I was going to ask, you know, what you just said right now, Gabriel, about him, you know, getting older. I think there's a strong possibility he gained some age with that fight with Guy Robb.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's about 30
Hey,
now.
I did, man. Gabriel, I mean, weight-wise, it ain't a big thing, you know. 130 is where I'm at right now. Don't really gain too much pounds while I'm off, you know. I don't want to have to go through all that struggle, you know, been there, done that. I mean, a lot of us boxers have, and I mean, you know, we don't like it, and so might as well just stay in the range where we could drop that easy weight and go into the ring ourselves, you know, not somebody else, and go in there 110%, not just 80%, you know. So we just like to, we 130 is a good weight class for me, man, and I want to do good in that weight class, you know, and until then I will go up, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Who's up there with you right now?
Right now we have Gennady Golovkin. Right now we have his best friend. I forget his name. Issa. I don't really know his last name. Right now we got Cotto. We got Miguel Cotto training up here for the Austin Trout fight, and that's pretty much it. We got his camp up here, and we got our camps up here. We got Ramon Valadez, which is fighting next Saturday.
Have you been giving him work at all?
Yeah, man. Yeah, we always get in good work with him. And I mean, we've been having Mikey Garcia come in for the past, it's been already 3 weeks. So all of us three get that good workout. You know, we all get that good sparring in. And of course, coming from a champion, Mikey Garcia, and an older guy, you know, he's teaching us well, man. He's working with us. He's giving us, he's shooting us pointers and all that good stuff, you know. So
that's a crazy stable.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
That's a murderer's
row,
right there.
Yeah, man, I'm really blessed, man, to be where I'm at right now and to be sparring with some of the top dogs, you know. And that's the only way that I'm gonna learn. That's the only way that me and my buddy Ramon Valadez is gonna learn, you know. Just bringing the top, the best ones in here just to work with us.
In a lot of ways, you've kind of already jumped in stages of your career. Like, you know, every fighter needs to go through the fire. You know, to learn from something, right? And you did that in the beginning of the year. And now, going through that fire, you've kept yourself completely busy. You've made sure that you've been consistent. But then now you got this murderous role, like my partner just said right now. It's like you crunched it all in 1 year. Do you think that that's a lot to take and to download?
Yeah, man. I'm like you guys said. The first month, I mean, it came out kind of hard, but I learned from that fight. And like you said, it was a fire, you know. And now that I put that fire out, I mean, it ain't nobody to start the fire again, you know. So I mean, we're patiently waiting, and hopefully that fire starts again, and we go up from there, you know.
Yeah,
you got to be in a tough spot too, because I mean, you've had that taste of TV. You've been super busy this year, 5 fights. You got a little bit of a rest.
Correct.
I mean, I imagine you can, you know, you probably healed up over the summer, but now you're probably chomping at the bit to get back in there and hit somebody. Do you think it's going to be TV, or you think it's going to be, do you have any idea what it's going to be, or you're just chilling?
Right now,
chilling, training?
Yeah, I'm just chilling, man. I'm just taking it day by day, like I said. We're here in training camp, and whatever. Whoever wants to step up, or whoever calls us, you know, we're more than ready. We're staying ready, and we're gonna be ready, you know, for whatever comes our way.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to get the update with you and check in with you and let you know that, you know, we still are thinking about you, even though you're up on that mountain, dude. You know, boxing fan. We still talk about you, even though you're not on TV. That's what I think was so great about the Guy Robb fight. It's why Dave was like, look, we should have him on. That's one of the top fights, and we want to make sure people remember that.
Yeah, you guys are one of the candidates, man. I think in a lot of people's heads, and my head, is fight of the year. You know, you guys really set that bar for the beginning of the year, and they kind of continue on. So, you know, just a recognition there for yourself there, brother.
Yeah, man. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. This boosted my self-esteem way higher now, man. Appreciate it, man. You know, I needed to hear something like that, and I'm thankful for being on this radio show right now, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, we're thankful for the fights, man. That's all we got to say.
You got to look at it. I mean, everybody's talking Garcia Alvarado, and it was a great fight, but you know, you were down in the second round. You get up.
Yep.
You put him down twice in the third round. I mean, it's just and you stop him in the seventh. That's a badass fight right there.
And I was at the apron taking pictures, and I remember the splat of blood. I can't remember the guy's name that was next to me, and he goes, how did it taste? And the blood hit my face, and I told him, like war, you know?
War, man. And that's what it was, bro. That's what all the fans want, people to go at it like that. But I mean, it goes both ways, you know. It goes both ways for the boxers and the fans. The boxer has to have a different plan, you know, once in a while, but we want to show the fans what we really have, and that's what we showed them.
Absolutely, man. Again, hey, thanks for calling in, and get better, brother, and we'll get you back on.
All right, man, appreciate it. I appreciate it. Much love.
No problem, brother. Thank you.
I catch you, man.
Right,
take
man.
Care.
All right, man. You got to take care.
You too. All right. Joel Diaz Jr., who, like I said, is a candidate with his fight with Guy Robb at the beginning of the year. We were trying to set that tone up, and we're going to continue doing that here on Leaving the Ring next week. We're going to be following up with the other candidates that we think that were the fight of the year in the run for fight of the year. Hey, we got to catch up. We got to talk some boxing here. I got a lot of fight fans are hitting me up on email. They want to hear what our thoughts about this past weekend, and they want to hear about this weekend upcoming up this week. We got some good fights coming up this Saturday night here on HBO, Boxing After Dark. So let's talk about potential fight of the year. This was a great matchup. I think in the 2 weeks in a row, we've had good fights.
Yeah.
Pete Quillen, that was a good fight. I honestly thought we found out a lot about the kid Shockley. You know, for a minute his face looked like he was in distress, and his confidence was built up there. But at the same time, I think his confidence almost ended at that end until he got that stoppage.
Oh yeah, I mean I think it was a fantastic fight for Quillen, and it was, you know, to paraphrase Manny Stewart, exactly how I thought it would go, except for the fact that I picked Njikam to win.
Yeah.
But you know, we talked about it, that his skill set would be a problem, his volume, his movement would definitely be a problem. The chin would be a problem for him, and as it turned out, that was really the difference in the fight. I mean, a lot of people were. I was on set. I was filming something while the fight was going on, so I didn't watch it till after. But I was following it on Twitter. And it was weird to me that how many people were saying it was a pretty even fight. And even afterwards, like Steven said this, and I agreed, was it was the closest fight where one guy got knocked down six times that I've ever seen.
Right.
You know, but I think Quillen will be much better for this fight coming out of it. But he's got to learn how to be more consistent. I mean, his offense was non-existent at times. He was kind of waiting for the big shot, and he would explode. But I mean, let's say he doesn't knock down Njikam. He's going to have problems with the guy that's busy, that's working off the jab, giving of movement. Those things need to be addressed. He needs a steadier double jab.
That raises that whole question and argument of how well would he do with Sergio Martinez. That's a fight that he's been calling for. Njikam obviously showed that movement and speed and awkwardness gives him problems. It does puzzle him a little bit. I saw the puzzlement. I saw him kind of be reluctant. I saw him, you know, not really sure how to set up his punches, not really sure how to move forward or cut the ring off. You know, to me, that raised a lot of questions. To me, at the same time, even though it was a great fight and he showed true grit in it by applying himself and keeping consistent by throwing that left hook, it did show me, though, there's a lot for him to learn, that sometimes calling out the big boys in the champion league, you shouldn't always do it. You got to learn. I think he's doing that learning curve.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it speaks to where the sport is today, that this Peter Quillen's now, you know, a champion, quote unquote. And I'm not denigrating him. I think the win is a good one. But in 10 years ago, maybe 15, 20, this would have been his step up fight. And then you have a few more like it. Like some people are saying, we don't know what this shows of Quillen. It shows that he gets tired late. And if a dude had more power, he might have some trouble.
This shows that this should have been his Diaz and Guy fight, his Roman and Garcia fight. That's not a championship fight. That's what this fight should have been. It should have been that step up of quality of figuring out who exactly he is and where he needs to go and the direction of correcting the mistakes he did on Saturday night.
Yeah. You know, but at the same time, a very good fight. I mean, it was just,
really great fight. Absolutely.
It was really the fight of the night. There's a lot of interesting things, and we didn't really get into really the big story. We've got 7:22. We've got some time. But you know, the Devin Alexander fight with Bailey, totally boring. Njikam, this was good. Malinaji Kano, how did you have it?
I had you know what? It was one of those fights. It was a back and forth with the knockdown. I really saw just everybody kind of divided, and it's one of those fights you just kind of go back and watch. And I still had, you know, Pablo Cesar Cano winning the fight, to tell you the truth. You know, I wanted to get him on to talk to him, and fortunately, it got lost between everything. But I don't know if people are going to say, well, the reason why you're picking Cano is because he's Latino, but I know a lot of folks that are non-Latino that picked him. They thought he pulled it off. I thought he pulled it off.
I thought he pulled it off. I don't judge fights that way. The people that say that, I just go, yeah, you're just stupid. I thought that he landed the harder shots. He dropped him late. He was landing the more telling blows, the more painful blows, and he kind of got Pauly out of his game. Pauly wasn't able to box him and beat the matador and do whatever he liked in there. I think the crowd, you know, I think they knew what they were seeing. Hometown decision. I mean, when the crowd there is booing it, and you're from Brooklyn, and you're Italian, and the other guy is a Mexican dude, what do you think? You know, I think Cotto won. Sometimes the fans know better than everybody else. Not all the time, but in this case, they were dead on the money.
You know, I think that fight, too, showed that, you know, Pauly is not of the old. He looked old a bit in this fight. His legs are not as mobile. He's got to stand and trade a lot more, which I've said in the past that he's become a bit more exciting because of the fact when you see a mover, a guy that depends on his movement, and when that kind of starts diminishing away, he becomes a much more, likable and fan-friendly fighter to watch. You know, Corey Spinks is one of to come in mind right away right now in my head is that here was a defense kid that was clearly always on his mind is staying away. And when he got older, what did we see? We saw a little bit more trading, a little bit more of him absorbing punishment. With Paulo Malnaggi, that's exactly what we saw too.
Yeah, I agree. His legs, maybe he just wasn't up for this one. He seemed so up for his last fight, you know, pulling off a title win. He wanted to show everybody, you know, that he was the man and that they were wrong. And in this case, you know, you think a style like Cotto's would have favored him, although Cotto, you know, coming into the fight, I thought he was going to be a little tougher. Everybody was really dismissing him. But when he was fighting Eric Morales,
he gave him a good run for his money.
He gave him a real – I was there live for that fight. He gave him a good run for his money. There was – Morales was not, you know, was not digging this opponent that came out of nowhere. And he was like the next highest ranked guy, so they let him fight. And he honestly, in these two fights, has shown that ranking and that they let him fight for the belt wasn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, this guy, I think he will make for action fights. I'd like to see him again. I mean, there's rarely justice in boxing, but I think if you're going to have justice in this case, let's see Cotto again. You know, as far as Pauly, you know, seems like a nice guy and everything. He kind of is a pissed off at the fans who don't agree that he, you know, or don't like him or don't enjoy watching him, this and that. I mean, I never denied his heart. But at this point, I mean, it's not must-see TV anymore. I mean, he can't knock anybody out. I don't know.
I really honestly disagree with people saying that they don't want to watch him. He's not a likable fighter. I've always been very entertained by him, but at the same time, you know, like I said, the legs are going away, and Pauly will probably say no, it's not, et cetera. This was the game plan to, you know, stay in there with him. But I tend to believe the legs are finally just – they've gotten a lot of miles on them. They've slowed him down, and he's just become just a little bit more exciting because he has to trade. There is no doubt in my mind. He has to trade, and at the same time, that just makes more – it just spells out for more exciting fights. Just throw out the fact that he doesn't have the knockout power, but he still does have the punch to keep you humble, to keep you – I mean, you know, he landed some pretty good shots with Pablo Cesar. Now, were they knockout punches? But they weren't. But they were definitely punches that made you go, ooh, that was a good shot.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I just think, like I said, he landed the more telling blows. I'll always lean in that favor. You know, Pauly is a hell of a boxer, but this isn't the amateurs. Just because you're touching a guy and can get away from him, that's not the game we're playing. We're playing the hurt game. And I thought that Cotto was the one doing the hurting. And so I'm going to – I thought it was a close fight. I don't think it was outright robbery and, you know, I get up and throw my headset and I'm never watching again. But, you know, I thought, you know, with the knockdown at least, certainly that was the difference in a tough, close fight. One guy goes down, the other guy doesn't, you know. And it's not like the Quillen case where, you know, Cotto was working where Quillen wasn't when he wasn't knocking Endam down. There was periods where he just was completely inactive. And I think that's always been kind of a complaint of mine with him. He's certainly Quillen, just to jump back to him, he's not ready for Sergio Martinez.
No,
And I will stick by my prediction that if he ever decides to fight Gennady Golovkin, Golovkin knocks him out.
Yeah, It's one of those, like I said, you know, practice your craft. But I do give him props for taking that fight, and it was a hard fight for him to get through. But I think honestly he's going to learn a lot from this. You know, going back and watching and seeing some of the mistakes that he did, he learned a lot from. Same thing with Pablo Cesar Cano. I think he learned a lot from that fight. This was a good experience for both guys. Let's talk about the man of the hour, you know, between Eric Morales and Danny Garcia. I've said it before, I think the kid just became full circle. Granted that Eric Morales is a much older fighter, I thought that, you know, his power is just blossoming even more. His confidence is just there. He's shining. And this guy's, the more and more he gets in there, the more and more he fights. And let's talk about this, Gabriel. He's been pretty busy this year, too. I don't think a lot of folks have pointed it out. He's been busy. He's been working with his craft. He's been working on that confidence build. And I think the more and more this guy is just becoming more dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's still a lot of mistakes, you know, too.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
he bows and arrows, you know. It's kind of crazy to me. You know, he throws that jab and the right hand comes away from his jaw. And you're like, dude, you know, you got to fix that. But
I think that's what makes him just that bit. I mean, you want to see your fighter correct that. You want to see your fighter tighten up just enough, you know, but I think that's what makes Danny. I think that's what gets him that extra, that entices the other guy to go, I can catch him, and I'm going to go for it. And at the same time, it gives Danny Garcia that opportunity to open up and catch them coming in, you know. So it's one of those catch-22 there, you know. You're damn if you don't do it, and you're damn if you do it.
Yeah, you know, it's – but, you know, I think this fight, what really happened was – Eric Morales was clearly he got old in that last fight, you know, towards the end there. He got dropped. In this fight, that removed the respect factor. And knocking out Amir Khan in between these two fights, like you said, he's just on a roll. You know, because you could say, okay, well, he beat Eric Morales and he was old and shitty, and so what does it mean? But in between there,
right,
he beat a guy that was many were pointing as to be the best guy in the division.
And in his prime.
Right, and he knocked him out in, you know, the same amount of time. So I think, yeah, Danny's on a roll.
It honestly solidifies the fact that he's a real threat and a dangerous fighter at 140. And the other thing, too, is by knocking out Eric Morales and not allowing Eric Morales to even catch a momentum or sneak in a few minutes in a round tells me that this was serious business for him. This wasn't a fluke. This wasn't I knocked out the best guy at 140. Now I'm going to cruise down the road and just, you know, and reap it up. He said no. It ain't going to happen. I'm going to show you that I got true power, and I'm here to stay, and I got the champion confidence.
Yeah, that goes a long way. You know, the confidence, and you just start to believe, and you get that, I hate to say the word swagger, but, you know, you get that feel of a champ, you know, and nothing can beat me, and you suddenly you can take punches a little bit better. You can you're not afraid to throw that left hook and just get it done, but you know, let me back up to the actual real story here, though. I mean, if we can. I mean, I think Garcia, you know, just to wrap it up, I'm not sure if he's the best 140-pounder, but he's going to be a problem for everybody. Matisse and him, it seems like absolutely the fight to make. I mean, if everybody's going to complain that Golden Boy won't put Donaire in there with a fighter that's under his stable in Regondeau, then you got to look at this fight is the same thing. It's kind of not fair. It's the obvious fight that stable could make. Maybe
right.
They build to it, but Matisse Garcia should happen because we're certainly not going to get Garcia Rios. We're not going to get Matisse Rios. So let's see this one, you know. But anyway, let's get. You want to get into the drug testing thing? I mean, we've 30 minutes left.
We still got to talk about these upcoming fights. You know, I think that a lot of folks want to hear us break down what's going to happen. We got some good fights coming up this Saturday night. At the same time, too, you know, I've seen a few people throw in now, is Danny Garcia fighter of the year? I think we'll bring that up next week because we're going to draw our thoughts of who should be fighter of the year.
He's in the category.
I think he's in the loop, man. I honestly think he's in the hat. You know, there's no denying the fact that the kid has made a very large ripple in the pond of 140. So absolutely, you know, But I'm not going to sit here and say yes automatically. That's really some thoughts there, in my opinion and stuff. But hey, let's pull up that fight schedule, Gabriel.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta disagree. I think I don't think we've ever been down on Danny Garcia. I think I've just followed his progress. There's one guy on Twitter saying that, you know, finally he gets props on our show. But I mean, I think we don't really try to glorify guys before their time. And I've watched Danny since his pro debut. And
I've seen Danny, you know.
Yeah, I've seen him live like five times, maybe. I don't know, four times. And there were times that I was very impressed. And then there was a period where I thought he was leveling off. It was hard to tell what to make of the Kendall Holt fight. I was there for that one live. I was impressed by the win. But I couldn't tell if that was just reluctant Holt or if that was Danny giving him a reason. And then the Nate Campbell fight, I thought he took a step backwards. It takes time building. Of all the Heyman fighters recently, he's been the most well-built,
you know,
in my opinion.
And also, too, look, I mean, this is the thing is that, you know, we knew the kid had something there. We've had him on Leaving Ring and on the Prospects Watch. He was one of the guys, one of the first kids that we had on that we thought we saw potential in him. But same time, with that potential, just like any other fighter, there's got to be criticism. And I think with that Kendall Holt, the criticism really got to Danny Garcia. It really did spark a flame there for him to take an understanding. You got to seize that moment. When he got the shot against Amir Khan, what did we say? He needed to grow up in this fight. He couldn't let this thing slip out of his hands with the Eric Morales the first time around. And I think he finally just got it in his head and realized, I got to grab a hold of this. This is my time. This is my moment. It was either going to make him or break him. And obviously we've seen the result. It's definitely has made who he is today.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he's been very well, well-built, brought along. I mean, you should feed him a guy like Eric Morales. And people that were denigrating him for taking the rematch, they have to remember that Morales had the belt, and there was a rematch clause, and he exercised it, and that's what this fight was. And that's what, you know, Danny did what you do with guys that you're supposed to get out of there. He got him the hell out of there, you know. And I really, you know, just really quick, because we got time to hit the fight schedule, and there's really nothing on Friday, but this fight should have never happened, you know, not because of the rematch clause, but you saw it. I've talked to a lot of people this week. In the anti-doping community, and to a person, they've said they've never seen this happen, that somebody tested positive. And just to break it down for people that are yelling about clenbuterol and the meat and, you know, Mexico meat, there's just as many instances of people dealing or taking clenbuterol and being suspended and caught for it. There's a, you know, player for the Giants, Mota, did, you know, 50 games with one team, and 3 years later, he did 100 games suspension for clenbuterol use. So don't give me the Mexican meat thing. There was no way that they could have gone down there to Mexico, grabbed the meat, brought it up, tested it. They didn't test the meat for clenbuterol. They were testing him. So they went on Wikipedia, just like we did on the show last week. Remember how quick I brought up the Mexican meat thing with clenbuterol?
Right.
Like 5 minutes of Googling it. That's what they did. They Googled their alibi. And I really have to think that if Scott Hale of Hailstorm Sports and his team, Joe Calix and Eric Anaya, had not researched this and broken the story in the morning, this may not have gone through. Because just look at my article from this week. Morales test positive for clenbuterol, the fight test boxing morals. It's a timeline of the events. And what happened ultimately, this is what reports are out there are saying, is that – I'm trying to cover myself legally here. They tested three samples, three sample sets. This is A and B's. There was two from October 3rd or 4th in some reports, the 10th and the 16th. The first two sample sets, the 3rd or 4th and the 10th, apparently tested positive. And then the last one taken, I think, around the 16th. Those tested negative for clenbuterol. And so they being the New York State Athletic Commission, allowed it to happen. But what should not have happened was the 10th and the 16th, maybe later when they're doing adjudication and he's appealing and all that, you test those. But once those first A and Bs, the third or the fourth tests right there, tested positive, fight should have been over. That's generally how it happens. And like I said, all the anti-doping people I talk to, high up people, from like WADA folks and others, won't give away my sources, but they all said, I've never seen this happen where they just kept testing until they got a negative. And you got to look back at Angel Garcia at the press conference and then the one-on-one he gives on Ring TV. It's all the links are in my article. He's upset about something and he says he won't tell you until after the fight. Do the math. What does that mean that he was going to talk about after the fight? Were they just going to go through and not tell us until after the fight? it kind of puts a lot of the work that I got banned for and denigrated by a lot of people in the boxing community, professionals and fans, puts it into a different perspective, in my opinion. Let's get to the fight schedule. I think I wrapped that up pretty quick. That was like 4 minutes. But, yeah, take a look at it. Don't give me the Mexican meat story. You know, I had some guy today hit me up on Twitter. Do your research, one about the, you know, because I know a lot of people aren't following me that are trying to go after me. I tag everything with boxing, and so they'll just find me that way and yell at me. Google my name and PEDs next to it, then come at me, because you're arguing with the wrong person in this one. October 27th, Saturday, 2012. There's really, like, there's no TV going on the Friday. At the Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York, which makes not a lot of sense. Miguel Vasquez on HBO, 31-3 versus Marvin Quintero, 25-3 for the IBF lightweight belt. Underneath that in support is Thomas Delorme, part of Team Puerto Rico, 16-0 versus Luis Abreu, or Abreu, 33-1. And Kareem Mayfield, 16-0-1 versus Mauricio Herrera, 18-2. Let's go back up top. What do you think, Dave? I'll put you on the spotlight.
I'm going to go with Miguel.
Yeah.
That's my pick. I mean, you know, I just think that he's got everything right now in the works in his corner that's just going to help him get through this, you know, and just keep him moving. I think that's the appetizer to lead into the two bigger fights that are coming down. The other ones to me are a little bit more of a you know, we have to brainstorm on just a bit, I think.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's this one, it seems to be. I mean, Quintero is just. It's hard to say, like, he's past it, but he's seen better days, in my opinion.
Exactly.
You know, I think Vasquez is the stronger fighter here, and I think he takes it. Delorme, Abreu, I think we're going to find out. This is an interesting fight.
Interesting, and also I think, and I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off.
That's okay.
It's a really interesting fight. I mean, I was going to ask you this before we got on the air, but it's also, I don't really think it was a great matchmaking fight, in my opinion. You know, Abreu is a big puncher. Delorme is more of a boxer, classic fighter. You know, where the awkwardness, this could really spell for a boring fight, or it can spell for an exciting fight.
Yeah, I just think
I'm not criticizing them. And I hope that, you know, because we had so many people that listened to the show, and then we end up hearing about it after. I'm not criticizing the matchmaking, but at the same time, this was a brave matchmaker, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. It's more of an action-packed matchmaking. Whereas with Quintero, and he's, you know, he's not an old guy. You know, saying he's past it or whatever. You know, he's just. To me, I don't see him special. I don't see him particularly durable. I mean, he got stopped by Daniel Eita, you know.
Well, I'm talking about the.
But Abreu in this fight, I just think it's such a fun fight. You know, I think the both styles, I think they're going to match up really well in terms of just you know, the way their offenses are going to mesh with each other. Delorme, I'm not sure who he is yet, you know.
That's it, exactly.
They're matching these guys so tough, so young, but, you know, they have nice amateur careers. He could be Joel Julio. He could be something more than that. I think this is the kind of fight that could really show him that. Because, you know, Abreu is an older guy, but he's also in his physical prime. He's 28. He's the older fighter, I believe, in this matchup. Certainly in terms of experience, he's got 34 fights and only one loss, and that was a competitive loss, in my opinion, to Tim Bradley. He didn't make Bradley look spectacular that night.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the
key thing. Yeah.
And that was the point I was making, was that, you know, not criticizing the matchmaking, but at the same time, you're looking at it and you say, wow, this was a matchmaker that could really just explode in the guy they're really looking to try to build, which is, you know, Tomas. You know, Abreu is the guy that they just physically is there to make you look shine. You know what I mean? The betting mind would go for Thomas, obviously, but Abreu is a live underdog in this one, in my opinion. He's got the punch that can really turn the fight around. We've seen him do it before, and he gave Timothy Bradley a real good run for his money by not allowing him to really be able to tee off and do the things that we've seen Bradley do in the past.
Are you going upset special, Dave?
I am. Actually, I am going upset special. You know, I think that Carlos Abreu power is going to shine in this one. Domorme, we're going to find out what he is made of. I you know, if he could take the punch, he could take the awkwardness, he could take some of the the mauling that Carlos Abagu is going to do, then it says a lot about his character and where he's at in his career. That means the next step. But this stepping stone that he's got to step over, it's not a short step. We're talking about a 3 foot, 4 foot jump.
Yeah, I can't pull the trigger on this one. I really don't know. We'll see. I'm not gonna do what you just did and pull the trigger. I want to go Abagu, but you know, I want to go Delorme. I don't trust either of them enough to really make a pick. You know, I'm just gonna enjoy it. Kareem Mayfield, Mauricio Herrera. I'm going Herrera on this.
You know what? I've picked against Kareem, I think, twice this year, and he has proved me wrong. With that overhand, it's just that dangerous. And, you know, Mauricio Herrera is a warrior. He was able to take Mike Alvarado's punches. Not a lot of guys can take that kind of punishment and still stand and say, look, I was in a great, great fight, which is also another candidate to fight of the year there, too. Mayfield's got... he's got a different type of power in that hand, that right hand. You know, is he the most stylistic guy that we want to see? No, I've always said that my biggest criticism of him is that he looks like the old of Shane Mosley, not the young of Shane Mosley. You know, but he's been able to get the job done. He's been able to stay undefeated, and he's been able to take out his opponents in front of him. You know, it says a lot in how he can punch and how he can rock guys. I've seen him do it live. You know, we've seen him do it on TV. I'm not really quite sure, because Herrera's going to give him so many opportunities to land that right hand. And we've seen the way Herrera fights. He's not a backward guy. He's a come forward. Stylistically, this is made for Kareem Mayfield. He needs a guy. He wants a guy to come forward. He doesn't need a guy that he needs to look for. Mauricio really has got to tighten himself up in this one and really put the machismo away in the locker. Does it spell for us fight fans a great fight? No. But for a smart fight, yes, he needs to stay away from that right hand, and he needs to make sure that the opportunities are just solely for himself, not for Kareem Mayfield.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough fight. You know, Mayfield is developing; he's coming along. I think, you know, nicely. I think what he brings, what tools he has had to begin with coming into his time with Virgil Hunter, really served him well. And I think they've sharpened him up. His footwork's a little bit better.
Balance too. It's not great, but it's like you can see it's you know, slowly just starting to, you know, he's starting to get his 2 feet underneath him, so he's stabilizing that. And that too, there too, Gabe, we got to point out, when you're able to stabilize a power puncher's feet, that only makes it the power added a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm going with Herrera. I like a guy that already knows who he is, that's kind of steady. He's got nice defense inside. I think they're pretty equal in terms of that. I think actually Herrera might be a little cagier, a little better at turning his defense into offense. I think it's going to be a tough nip and tuck fight. I bet you I would not be surprised to see Mayfield get the decision, but we feel that Herrera is the one that kind of pulled it out. But I think it's going to be a tough fight like that.
I love this fight. I got it, really honestly. I'm really looking forward for this fight. I don't think I've ever really looked forward for a Kareem Mayfield fight, but just with the, you know, Herrera involved in this one, we're gonna get something. There's gonna be some magic, man. I don't think it's gonna be a short night, but to point this out, you know, and I'm just playing it in my head right now of how this fight can end up happening here, is that Herrera just starts landing and he's doing all the work. The output is going to be there, but the scary thing is that output can build overconfidence, and that overconfidence can overlap into mistakes, and that mistake can cost them the fight. We've seen it happen with Kareem Mayfield. We've seen guys get a little bit overzealous and become a little bit they end up being just available for that right hand. That's what my concern is with Herrera. But at the same time, Herrera can outwork Kareem Mayfield, and if he could take Kareem's right hand, Kareem's in for a long, long, long night, because if he didn't train and he's not properly conditioned to go the full amount of rounds that they're going to go, I honestly say Herrera wins it by points because of the output. Kareem needs a knockout the way Bailey needed it against Alexander.
Hmm. Interesting. We will see. It could be that kind of. I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be. It's going to be a possible spontaneous combustion.
Absolutely. You know, to me, you know? It could either be a Randall Bailey versus Mike Jones, where Mike was getting all the ups and the points, and bang, it ended that night with that nice overhand right. Or it could be a Randall Bailey just can't get off. He just can't seem to really get hurt. Devon Alexander. That's what I'm seeing. We could see two things at once.
Yeah, without question. You know, it's really trippy. Somebody mentioned this to me, and I'm looking at the fight schedule here, and we have all the pictures of the guys on Max Boxing, and boy, Radio Raheem and Kid Chocolate do actually, in fact, look quite a bit alike. It's really weird. I have to mention that to him. Raheem actually trained to my gym too. But at the Arena Cuidad de Mexico in Mexico City, Mexico, Rafael Marquez, 41-7 versus Christian Mijares, 46-6-2. Mijares is experienced late career surge. His strength and conditioning coach is Memo Heredia. Just an interesting fact. Marquez Mijares.
I actually like this fight, man.
Oh, it's a great little fight, man.
It's a great little fight. Is it better, you know, late than never type of fight? But I like Marquez in this one here. You know, Mijares, you know, he hasn't been obviously in the wars and stuff, but his chin has been dinked up and damaged a little bit more than Rafael Marquez. Rafael Marquez has been dropped, but he's got the wear and tear. But I think he's still got the punch, and then we all know the punch is the last thing that leaves.
Yeah, unfortunately, the first thing is the legs. I think his legs are maybe the punch resistance as well. Both those things. Although, you know, he went the distance, with talk about thanks for the brain fart. Nishioka, yeah, Toshiaki Nishioka.
Yep.
Last year in October, this time last year. And it was able to hang in that fight. I mean, he's worse for wear, and he always feels like he's one punch away from getting just knocked the hell out.
Right.
But he's always right there, and you're right. He has enough power to keep people honest, and he was right there with Juan Ramon Lopez for the injury. It's a tough fight to call. You know, I think it's going to come down to who can take the other guy's punch,
I think it comes down to
who
got older.
Yeah,
that's
a very Madden way of looking at it. You know, hey, whoever scores the most points wins, but... You know, I think it's going to come down to that. Whoever lands first and flush, we'll see how the dude takes it, and it's going to go from there. I think that's going to be a hell of a fight this weekend. Edgar Sosa, 46-7, versus Myung Lee, 15-2, is in support there. At the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio, Texas, on Tela Futura, Antonio Escalante, 28-4, versus Rocky Juarez, 28-10-1.
Here we go. Another good little scrap. It's a crossroad fight, in my opinion. Antonio Escalante getting blown out in the first round against Alejandro Alacran Perez, you know, and he was able to make a comeback in his next fight. And Rocky's just been Rocky.
Yeah. Is he going to let his hands go? And when he does, will Escalante be able to handle it? He's been a little bit chinny. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting fight. We'll see.
I think, if anything, man, honestly, when Rocky Juarez decides to retire and his last fight as a going-away present, let the guy fight 15 rounds, please. Just give him that, you know? We got a guy that he's a 15-round fighter. He's not a 12-round. He's not a 10-round. He's not an 8-round fighter. He's a 15-round fighter.
Yeah. Well, tell him to compress that. You know? Let your hands go. We don't do those anymore.
Absolutely.
At the El Paso County Coliseum in El Paso, Texas, Takalani and Davlevu.
Just for the record, I got Escalante winning this fight.
I want to say Rocky Juarez versus Alejandro Lopez, 23-2. In support there, Matt Korobov, where's he been? 17-0 versus Milton Nunez, 24-5-1. Brad Solomon, 18-0, and Abraham Hahn, 17-0, takes on Adan Leal, 9-4. Glenn Tapia, 15-0, versus Juan De La Rosa, 23-1 in support. And that, my friends, is your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go. Another edition of Leaving the Ring. Again, really quick, rest in peace, Emmanuel Stewart. I believe we had a great show, a lot of stuff to talk about, some sad and some happy things here on Leaving the Ring. Again, too, I want to say to my cousin, rest in peace, Darren Mitchell. I love you. I miss you, bro. And, you know, we gave the guy gave me a lot of great memories. You're never going to be forgotten in my heart.
Yeah, and, you know, I got to say, you know, just RIP to Emmanuel Stewart. You know, he gave so much to the game, and so rarely do you give back to somebody like that. But I have to say, my bragging rights with Manny, or Emmanuel, I introduced him to Maker's Mark Kentucky Bourbon. He'd never had it. And it's one of my great, great memories of sitting there drinking, and I ordered the first drink, and that's what I always ordered at the time. And he was like, "What is that?" And I was like, "Maker's Mark." And he couldn't get the name down, but he sure liked the bourbon. we had a few, and it was just hilarious watching him sip it and, like, look at it like, you know, it was just the most amazing thing he'd ever had. And so I got to give back to Emmanuel. And, man, I'm just going to miss the hell out of him, dude. What a show, as always, Dave. It was a pleasure, and felt right that we were doing a show and we were able to honor him. And it kind of fell into place with people that knew him and just wonderful.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's always sad when you lose somebody, but, you know, how can you ever watch a fight tape without having Manny Stewart on it? You know, it's going to be great.
You know, and in addition, really quick, you know, we should have honored him with a 12 count, but I think we honored him by allowing a lot of fight fans call in and speak about Emmanuel Stewart's, their experience meeting him and about his illustrious career. I apologize for the rest of the folks. We have a lot of, regular callers that call in that didn't get a chance to speak their piece next week. You know, I'd say, why stop talking about Emmanuel's career? We can continue on. That's how we're going to keep his memory alive.
Yeah, without question. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, have a great night. Gabe, I'll talk to you later. Dave, thanks a lot, as always. And fight fans, hey, thanks for tuning in and listening to us, man. Much appreciated.
Peace.